I'm personally very excited about having the possibility of an equestrian facility in Clark County, especially those that serve unfulfilled needs that we don't have right now. As I've discussed these plans with other people, though, other equestrians, I've noticed two things. The first thing that I've noticed is that most people don't know about these plans, didn't even know that this was on the books, which is a bit surprising because it's been 8 years. These are marked in 2010, so a little bit wider knowledge would be great. And then the second thing that I've noticed is every person that I've talked to has been very enthusiastic about having more equestrian facilities, especially in that area, and the possibilities for those facilities. All of them have expressed interest in saying, what can we do to get involved? What can we do to help? What can we do to help this move forward? So on behalf of the equestrian community, I'd like to share our enthusiasm and interest with you. At the same time, I'd like to let you know that there is a lack of information and clarity about what those plans are. I just got this lovely book, though, so that's going to help a lot. So we'd like some clarity as well as a timeline for what those look like. I know that there are some financial constraints right now that say what steps we're planning on taking. We'd like to also know what we can do to help some of the other things, particularly for horses, going forward. We'd like to know when the topics are going to be discussed and how we can stay up to date on them. And then finally, I'd like to ask how the equestrian community can support these plans and discussions, and how we can help give input on the facilities, help with funding, help with volunteering to show up and make this happen. Anything else that we can do. Almost everybody I've talked to would really like to get involved. We just need to know how. So in conclusion, thanks for your time and energy on this project and everything else that you do for Clark County.
Do you want to address that now, or do you?
Sure, I can speak to it. I'm going to be talking about the Daybreak Master Plan in the presentation a little later on. But in the Master Plan, it does call for an equestrian center at Daybreak, the Lower Daybreak Park. And that's going to be a joint effort between us and the private sector doing that. So sometime about 2.5 years ago, I was reaching out to the Clark County Saddle Club because they were relocating. And so I had a lot of discussions with them, and they almost decided to land there, but they decided to buy some property north of 503. That's where they ended up. And so it is in the master plan. And if we can find a suitable group that would like to work with us on placement in the equestrian center there, I think that would be great. So right now we are in possession of $600,000 from a recent RCO grant that we applied for back in 2016. We were awarded that grant, and so we're going to spend it on a phase one development, which is a trail that runs from one end of Daybreak to the other end. And I'll show you a photo of that when we get it up. You want to pop it up, Jeremy? We can look at it right now real quickly, in case you have to leave.
That trail will be open to equestrian?
Yes. Then that trail is actually a part of a much longer trail that's going to go from Louisville all the way to Paradise Point along the alignment of the East Fork Lewis.
You're talking this one?
No, it's should be local or Daybreak Master Plan. One of the photos.
It's probably towards the end.
There it is. Okay. Here's our current boat launch right here. You got the highway bridge right here. So the trail's gonna go from the boat launch, big parking lot here, and follow the river alignment all the way down to the end of the property right here. And then this is gonna be a 10 or 12 foot wide asphalt path. This is gonna be a big chip trail. Okay. Equestrian center will go right here in this whole corner. But you know, phases 2 and 3 will afford restrooms, shelters, caretaker facility, all of that. So there's going to be several phases based on the money that we get. This is a general fund site, so grants are hugely critical to us and other forms of funding. So it's going to be, it'll happen as we get funding.
Are questions included on anything in phase one?
Well, help us with the phase one trail building, of course.
Okay, so there are some adjustments that can be made to it, because right now it doesn't show equestrians.
Yes. So this was designed for the grant application originally, but yeah, we can show equestrians in here. So the whole idea is to be an equestrian park, but it's a pretty short trail right now. We are working on a piece upriver from Daybreak called Lewis River Ranch, And that'll continue this trail all the way through. This trail will have to actually utilize the highway bridge to come across and back down, because we have a big cliff face right here. There's no way to build a trail going west. We got to go across and then cross back over and go down. So it's going
to
be.
To clarify what you need from us, then, is more volunteers to come and help that. We can be involved
sure.
in this phase one.
Absolutely, yes.
I have a question, not knowing much about horses. Can horses walk on the paved areas?
It's not something we want to do all the time.
Okay.
But for a short distance, we're okay with it. Pavement is very slick. Even the bicyclists have said before that the pavement doesn't work for them as well, either because of our Northwest, we get all the slime on there, and it's very, very slick in the winter. So for, if it wasn't paved, it would be better. Other types of things that we are using in Little Creek Park right now that are really working well. And as Bill can testify, it has been a wonderful thing. It's a lot less costly than paving. If you decided to go that way, you could probably save quite a bit of money. It would be more suitable for, as well as year round, suitable for everybody, and still year round. Because the wheelchairs can go on the Eco Green Grid type of stabilizing thing with the gravel.
So, is it permissible for some primitive offshoots from the main paved trail there at Daybreak?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's other faces that basically bring these trails all over the place. If you look inside the master plan, which Anita's got, it'll show a whole build out of it. But there's one thing we can talk about. So we're just now going to construction management to talk about the planning and design of this first phase. So they just now got this in their hands. So we can probably put a 3 or 4 foot wide trail right alongside this one for the horses as well. It would be very possible, or gravel. Yes.
The one thing that we need more than anything in order to access any of this is parking for the horse trails.
Right. That was my question.
Yeah.
So
they can't park in your parking lot.
So this parking lot, you should be able to, because this is a boat parking lot, so the stalls are extra long. So.
But there's not enough. I mean, if half a dozen horse people show up, and then people like to park their cars behind it.
Sure. Well, it's actually not too bad of a parking lot. I've never seen that fully fully loaded with cars and trailers, so most time I go by there, that parking lot's at least half.
The more you develop a park for people.
Well, once phase two is going to have a bigger parking lot, so this parking lot's actually going to move. The entrance is going to come down into here and come in this way with a big parking lot in here. So, but for phase one, just for the trail, we're going to leave it as is. Of course, that's all we can afford. So, but yeah, there's those stalls in there are probably 40 feet long, so you should be okay with parking. Yep.
If equestrians mowed it down, would it be acceptable for us to just park in the field temporarily? Because the other thing with parking is not just the stall of a horse, but we tie up. So if you're thinking about one stall for a horse, is 3 stalls for cars. That might be a cheap temporary solution that I'm sure we could do as an equestrian community, just to mow something down to have a field to park in that would be safe for
so
horses
Bill.
Out of the way.
I'm doing the saddle club facility right now, and we are going through that, and the vehicles, the county is adamant that the vehicle is parked on pervious or concrete, gravel, whatever it is. They, so far, they're going to let us put the trailer portion on grass, so that way they can tie up and stuff in the grass, but we haven't got it approved yet, so we'll see where
that
goes.
We do have to worry about rutting, and the wrong time of year, it can be a mess, and a lot of damage done, so. Yeah, kind of look at both sides of that.
Well, it's a put a pin in it. The parking does. We have some unique needs.
Okay. Yeah, these are all trailer stalls right here, and our car stalls are right here. So you can see these are double length. So there's quite a few of them here. And we have a lot of folks that launch at Louisville Park and take out here. So those are the folks you're going to be seeing. They're posted. They're all pretty close, basically. But so we can look at that. Jeremy's got this whole piece right here leased out right now. But, you know, when we start developing the park, we'll have to reduce the size of that footprint when this road comes in.
Well, it's really encouraging that we can be involved even with phase one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I remind you, we also have Frenchman's Bar, Equestrian,
yes,
and Whipple Creek.
Yeah, and so these folks here are actually with the Whipple Creek Restoration Committee. And they've been very instrumental in getting Whipple Creek to what it is today. So.
Are you going to adopt out this park in the future, this neighboring park?
Yep.
So that's what we're kind of looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, right here, this is I think it's a private equestrian center right here.
Mm-hmm.
This is this big top. So I think there's another one just pretty close by. I think that has something to do with why South Club may not have wanted to be there. Plus, it's that they thought that the trail system was pretty limited, and right now it actually is until we actually get it built. That might be some time away, but yeah, the site is actually quite friendly, especially.
But you are talking about the connection to the Lewis River Trail also.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah.
And that would be a connection for horse also?
Yes.
Okay. You have to ask.
Our intent is from Louisville all the way down to Paradise Point. Right. So that's going to be all of us.
Well, we really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing out there. We're very excited about it. So
sure.
We're going to stir up some interest.
That's good.
You'll get it here for us. Sorry.
We appreciate all the help we can get.
So, Bill, I haven't looked at the master plan a long time. Wasn't there an arena in the master plan?
Yeah, arena. Yes.
So, but the county's not interested in running an arena, right? They're looking for a group to run it. So that's the other side of it.
We want an entity to come in and just use our land footprint,
right?
But they do it all.
So that'd be something you guys could be looking for, is a group that wants to run a facility.
I'll be talking to Clark County Executive Horse Council and Clark County, which is brand new, Clark County Equine Foundation.
Okay.
And we'll get some answers from them.
There's definitely some conflicting responses about what the master plan shows and how logical it is for the actual needs of the horse community.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not something that we need to tackle right now.
Okay, all right.
We'll get it so you have a refined group that you can deal with.
Okay, that sounds great.
That would be great. Ma'am, did we answer your questions? Or?
I think a large part of the horse community, there are such nice trails on the river bottom, and there's no access to them except through Crazy Eight, that's the name of it, the stable. And there's only like 3 parking spaces there. They charge $20, and that's it. I mean, that's the only way to get down there. So
okay,
if we had a way to get down there and parking for the trailer, I'm in.
That's up there, Peacock Stable.
Is that the old Peacock Stable?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's crazy. The old Schaefer property. That's closer to the center.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrainous there. It's hard to get down there. You know, so we got that access road going down is actually, I don't think that's ours even, but we maintain it. It's beautiful open lands down there. It goes a long ways along the
Lewis River. Very nice.
So our intent is to have a trail system.
I'm connected to the south side, so that's part of the reason I'm very invested in it, because I can ride all the way there, but not on a trail system that's designated, and that would be a good place.
Yeah, so you can actually access a portion of the trail through the center bottoms, right below the treatment plant.
Yep.
So that unfortunately doesn't go a long ways, you know. So it's longer than this trail, but it's still, it does terminate, so we got some trail connections to make.
Well, I board with the cons who own all that property that's right there.
Oh, okay.
And so if you're looking to make connections and talk to people, I'm there.
I do have a question. If you're talking about extending this trail, are you talking about extending it in pavement?
It'll be a multi-use trail, so likely yes. But we can always have a shoulder trail, you know, like for equestrians. So that's the idea. So it's going to be multi-use. That means every form of recreation we provide on that. So that's the users. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, so let's go through our administrative actions, and we'll start with roll call. Bill, why don't we start with you, and we'll go around the table.
Bill, Parks Manager.
Gloria Hilty, Parks Administration Assistant.
John Spencer Pab, and if I made it by roll call, that means I'm on time.
You're still recorded as here, yes. At the start.
Kelly Fudney Pab.
Barbara Anderson Pab.
Jay Chester Pab.
Kelsey Potter Pab.
Dave Weston Pab.
All right. All right, so we'll review the minutes. I'm sorry, do we have any guests? I apologize.
We've got Eric Christensen on staff.
I was going to say, nobody else wants to claim this up. All right.
And Jamie. And Brinley. He's a junior member.
Junior guest. All right. Okay. View and adoption of last month's meeting minutes, July 13. Is there any discussion? If not, can I have a motion to accept?
Make the motion to accept the minutes of the last meeting, which was dated July 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Second
it. All right, it's been moved and seconded.
Second.
Oh, third. We have a second and a second. Yeah. Second and a third. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Can I make a comment on these motions that were passed this last time?
Sure.
Just to let you know, I'm meeting with Mitch Nichols and Bob Berquist. So Mitch Nichols is the community development director. Bob Berquist replaced Paul Scapelli. And so I'm meeting with him Monday to talk about the enforcement in our office areas. And I'll show him our motions and see if we can get this up to the board as well.
Okay. Great. Good follow-up. Okay, volunteer hours. You have to do not what your leader does, because I have not put my volunteer hours in there. I'm late. You did this morning. Okay, Kelsey's leading the pack. She gets the gold star for the day.
Maybe there's another way we could do that.
I guess we could. I mean, you'd have to write it down and submit. But
we haven't been very good about it.
They're right. No, there. We haven't. We haven't. But you can do it online and. Probably
easier said than done.
Easier said than done. That is true.
Home every meeting, thinking I'm going to do it, and then.
She
knows how to take care of us. But we're trying not to give her any more work than we have. That's the other side of the coin. Whoops.
Oh,
I'm sorry. No, Brenda, can you push that out of the way for Grandma? Yeah. Thanks, honey.
Anybody else need a problem? I did.
Dave gets a gold star too. All right, good. All right, so we'll go to our unfinished business. Did we get a PIF update? I saw one in the package here.
Yeah. So for the month of July, we just got this in this morning. So in PIF 5, we got 82,642. PIF 6, 39,533. PIF 7, 12,509. PIF 8, 43,684. And PIF 9, 48,360. And PIF 10, 29,579. So that's in addition to what we had last month. So monies are still rolling in. I noticed it's dipped a little bit. You know, it's been so prolific lately that seeing this dip is, you know, doesn't break my heart. But I think it's going to start going back up as properties are completed. So
did we overspend in 10? Is that what the parentheses are? It said previous balance 710.
Yeah, that was. We had some expenditures on that new property that we developed, the Berry acquisition. So we had the house demolished.
Oh, never mind. There's still a balance. It's still a positive balance.
Yeah,
usually when I see parents, I think of negative balance.
Yeah, it just means that we had some expenditures, so we didn't have the gain that we had in the other.
Right. So that was for the phase one cleanup.
We had more expense than gain.
Yeah.
Correct.
Is what you're saying. Okay.
It's the only one with parents as well.
So we're still plugging away. It was really nice. So I'm really happy to see this. I'm always pleased to see the new reports when they come out.
Okay, and then we have the Lewis and Clark Trail update.
Yes, you want to put that up on our screen, Jeremy? So the next document that's in your packet has a bluish color, Help Build Our Trail. So we met down at City Hall with the Vancouver or Evergreen Highway Trail Coalition. And this is a group of folks that have been around for decades. They all live on the Evergreen Highway. They know everybody up and down the Evergreen Highway from one end to the other, essentially. And one gal, I think that he was more senior person, has been there for 55 years. The junior person was there for about 35 years. Pretty interesting group of folks. They really want to see the trail get built on the older Evergreen Highway. And so they went through back in 2013, did a lot of planning work, and got it to, I think, a 30% phase, or 30% completion on design. And so that is from 164 all the way up to, I can't remember the name of the road. It's right above Whitley Park.
Kelly so, might know.
You know what road that is? That where it comes up from Whitley?
What did I call them?
But I don't remember the name of the road. However, a majority from Whitley Park, basically all the way down to 164, they said, we're to the point from the city of Vancouver, all we need is money. And so I think we're going to really start pushing this piece as we move forward. They were really concerned about any alignments down by the water. But they're all for a trail alignment along the highway itself. But anything down by the water, they had some pretty grave concerns over. And so we just noted that.
There's some areas down on
Chelsea Avenue.
Thank you, Kelly.
There's a couple of areas along that highway, though, that you won't have much room.
Yeah, unless they're working to make it.
Okay, yeah. All right.
They'll be acquiring some properties. It's, yeah. 30% there.
Yeah, down by Columbia Springs, they actually did build a couple sections of the
trail. Oh, okay.
Then
okay.
You see that newer pavement.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
It comes clear up to 92nd now, so they've gone clear to 92nd, but we didn't get clear to.
Right. They want to keep going. They have that.
Hopefully, with the Evergreen Arboretum, will be a trail in for something.
Yes. So.
Okay, all right.
But they haven't done anything from 164 east, if you will. So
right.
That's kind of
right.
That still needs to be addressed.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
So I was happy to hear that they exist. We didn't know about it until Diana actually set this meeting up with us. And so I was really pleased to see that they're on board with us and they're fully engaged with our next steps if we want to include them. So that was good. Did I miss anything? Nope. Okay. Laura went with me. I've had to bring the muscle along with me. So,
all right, Facebook page update.
Just a brief one. We had our best post ever. I posted pictures from Otto Brown and shared the story on Facebook, and we had 1,357 people see the post.
Wow.
Which is by far way more than any numbers we've gotten. And then we had a lot of comments about people talking about Otto Brown himself and how they remember one gal lived out in that area where his brother used to come over. Anyways, people are just sharing stories about the park and the name and taking people who live near the property. And so good. It was good. It was a very good moment. It's what I envisioned the Facebook page being. And people asking questions where the park is located, even though I put the exact address in the post. So, but it was good. So kind of humming along with that, people seem most engaged in the ones where we include pictures of things or new properties or did you know sort of questions. So keep sending ideas. We're putting events up, that sort of thing. I need to email Karen and get a list of upcoming things because I occasionally put stuff up for her, but so far we're doing pretty, or it's on the back of this agenda too. We're doing well. I think the Facebook page is finally doing what we want it to be doing. So, yay. Yeah. And that is all.
Thank you for management.
Yeah.
All right.
Really cool.
The youth member update, the only real update is we're going to delay until October just for the recruitment program. due to people going back into school and in the first month of September kind of being hectic and frantic. And we'll put out our recruitment flyers then. Freight Rail Dependent Use Advisory Committee. Mr. Spencer.
Yet another meeting coming up on the 30th at Hawkinson High School. If anybody wants to be there at 7 p.m. and enjoy an evening of people yelling at each other regarding freight rail uses, see you, please show.
All right.
Very thorough.
So that leads us to Parks Code Review. Bill and Eric.
Yeah, Eric. Since we're talking about before we move on to the freight rail, I just want to note that we are still working, actively working on Bridge 12. That is the railroad crossing over Cedars Golf Course. That's going to get replaced, and we're also still actively working on the pedestrian bridge that's going to be right next to it. So, Cedars Island is very engaged to get that trail built.
Yeah.
So, we're kind of bouncing back and forth as to ownership on different things with the railroad.
Manager, I believe. Yes.
Okay, so, but anyways, that's our hope is to keep moving forward with this whole thing. And so, it's not. I'll start reporting on it as we hit some milestones.
Did you confirm that he has control over all that right away?
Yes, he. Well, probably should be talking about this. It's kind of preliminary, but he is the sole person that can use the rail for freight.
Okay.
But as far as complete control of the right of way, we have control. So that's the whole. But
that's
I wouldn't notice that right now because it's pretty simple.
It's an interesting.
Right. But
we do have the ability to do what we want to do on that right.
Everybody could
repair road bridges, intersections, that kind of stuff. But I always think
about
that. He doesn't have sole exclusive use over it, but he is the sole operator. So probably the majority of what should have been just guys.
Yeah, nothing. Well, and really, communication works the same way. It's just in the back of your mind, you know you're safe.
Yes. So I just found that out recently, and I'm happy. The ability to do things on that right away. That goes well. Okay. Sorry.
Okay, up to you guys. Bill, Eric.
So yeah.
Part of the review.
So we talked about the code updates for parks to do that this fall. And so as we update our codes, you know, there might be some pretty minor changes, but we're also going to craft some policies that align with the code. So like the code says, you know, no aircraft in parks unless it's pre-approved, you know. And so this policy that Eric crafted is kind of addresses that. And Eric, I believe you crafted this from like the state.
I wouldn't say that I crafted, more so that I borrowed it.
I'll let you talk.
Well, Washington State Parks actually has a really solid drone use policy. Mm. So, a lot, and I really, like I said, borrowed pretty heavily from what they do. It made a lot of sense in terms of consistency. A lot of times what I find as far as parking fees go, for example, is people come into parks and they ask us all the time if their Discover Pass is valid, or they assume that Discover Pass is valid, so we get a lot of that. So it kind of seemed, with that experience in mind, it seemed like a natural fit to just, okay, well, let's look at what some other folks do, but Washington State Parks, I thought, flushed it out pretty well, and largely that's what you see here in front of you with a few exceptions in terms of we would want to have the ability, if you look at item number 11, if you have somebody who's applying for a permit to fly a remote controlled aircraft in a park, we'd want to have the ability to deny it based on if they are in an unpaid status or if they have outstanding parking fee parking fee contracts or permits or reservations or something like that. If they're in a delinquent status, we'd want to have the ability to do that. But for the most part, just running through this, it just talks about, okay, where in the park code, item number 2 states, okay, where in the park code section does it talk about remote controlled aircraft or airplanes? And then just outlines, okay, when must the applicants be submitted? What's the kind of information that we're looking for in terms of, if you look at items 7.1 through 7.6, those would be the basic things that we would request on an application in terms of date, times, and locations, elevations, time of day, speeds. We could ask for a map that shows where they are going to fly, the type of flight that they're going to take. Is it recreational? Is it commercial? A lot of times we get permit requests for commercials, like Toyota's had a commercial filming, various catalogs like LL Bean, that kind of those kinds of things we get from time to time. So that would be something that we could anticipate. I think we could should anticipate happening. And then just other things in terms of just the weight of the device or the aircraft and those kinds of things. So we are seeing quite a bit of an increase over the last few years in terms of the requests for that type of use in parks. We get it pretty regularly now. We don't really have a policy or a procedure in place or criteria to determine, well, this person can fly and this person can't. So at the end of the day, that's what we want to have a policy for. So if the code says it's allowed but only by approval of the parks director or designee, then we, okay, well, how do you make that determination? And that's what we want to use this policy for.
Is there a licensing or qualifications for being able to fly these drones? I mean, I've seen some kids get up there and they just go nuts.
Yeah, I believe the drone is over, what, half a pound in weight. I believe there's a special aviation license that is required.
Okay.
To fly.
And are we requiring that?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says here only for if it's for business use.
No, 7.4. If the weight's over half a pound, essentially, they have to provide proof of registration with the FAA.
Oh, okay.
If it's for work or business, certification, then.
Right. And then 7.5, if it's for work or business, essentially a commercial purpose, they'd have to provide proof of their certifications.
It's good clarification.
We're getting calls coming in from people who are angry because they've got this drone and they can't fly it anywhere.
Right.
They want to fly it in our parks. We've been saying no all along, and we cite all the reasons, and they push back, and sorry, in the end, no. You know, I said we can go on a permit basis. You know, let us know. We want to know when you're out there, when you're flying it. You know, what your purpose is for flying it, recreational, commercial. And so this really does help to address that. And I think that as we go through our codes and make those updates, we'll probably bring in more policies your way for review as well. So to really help clarify how we operate.
Well, this is
so
the cost.
Number two,
the cost
of the permit.
So our current permit structure is really, it's pretty affordable. It's $25 for a basic permit, but if for a commercial filming and photography, it's $400 a day.
So it's $25 every time
Okay.
that you want to go fly a drone
per day.
Yeah.
I think it's fair.
So 7.4, of course, brings out the point of enforcement, and I know that you're going to be asked that question at the policy consideration. So, while you have a policy, you probably need to also have an enforcement policy as well. Because, like, if somebody has registration for a 0.55 but uses something that weighs a lot more than that, who's going to make sure that the policy and the permit are actually monitored and enforced?
So, monitoring will probably be done by our staff that are making staff out there in the field. The only enforcement that we're going to have is the Clark County Sheriff's Office. They're the ones who can actually enforce it. Issue a citation.
So, it says here on number two that you're going to have a designated area, so that some of these kids can go out and fly their little hovercrafts, which I think is a good idea because, like, my grandsons have got them.
Well, if they have $25.
But how do you envision this designated area will look?
Well, we don't
still would have the concern about invasion of privacy, which seems to be the driver. Would it be just only in remote locations?
we haven't discussed what a creating or designing any kind of a designated area. What the code states, this is taken from the code, where it says you can, it's prohibited except in an area specifically designated.
Well, but I figured you were planning on designating.
We hadn't had that conversation.
We have all these undeveloped parks, like fields sitting in neighborhoods or whatever. Is there any way to designate those, even if it's temporarily?
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes sense.
Yeah.
That's
sense
a good idea.
Without having a charge, we wouldn't have actual designated areas.
Yeah.
We do have one that's actually designated, and that's at the Kenny Fair grounds. Right. They have a landing strip in the whole bit. No. That's for model aircraft, and there's a whole group there. But they do charge to utilize that, you know, that strip. So that's one thing we can probably talk about, is something that we know is not going to, the wildlife won't be harassed. We can probably say, go over here and fly, you won't be bothered. And where people typically aren't.
I'm thinking like 99th and 137th or whatever that is right there. There's that big field that everyone runs their dogs in.
Right.
There you go.
So on number 14, you're missing the word B. The applicant will refund it. It will be refunded, the permit fees.
And then that last line, where the denial is overturned on appeal, we wouldn't refund somebody their application fee if their application. Basically, what it's saying is if their application is eventually approved,
they'd still pay.
That's just that last. Those last few words, or the denial is overturned on appeal, those need... that's confusing. It needs to be removed.
Might be nitpicky, but it also may give you some enforcement power. Under 7.4, I'm not sure if the weight should be gross weight or dry weight. That would be whatever the FAA says.
What's the difference? I don't know.
Fuel and or payload.
Oh, with fuel on board.
Yeah, so if it's carrying a heavy camera, it could be...
Oh, no, he's a pilot. You know that stuff. So that's why I thought he could educate.
And related to that, to Melodia's point, it might be worth putting a line in that says anybody found not to have proper proof of registration will be reported to the FAA. Because that's some serious enforcement power at that point.
That's a good point.
Good point.
Yeah, because we do want to have some enforcement. We don't want to end up with another dog issue. You know,
where you got the care special being what it is, I think you've got an objective to share it with the
But I think this is just true with all of our parks rules. I mean, people run their dogs in my neighborhood park without a leash. It sucks, but I'm not going to call 911 to have a sheriff come out. Right. It's going to be along the same lines. If people break rules in our parks, you just have to make that decision. Is this dangerous or serious where we need to call someone? I mean, we just don't have the resources to have, unless we get a park ranger.
Or you could have a drone. You could do remote.
I mean, I'm not worried as much about enforcement.
Killer drones. If something happens and it falls down and hits someone, that's when they're going to find out that they were wrong.
Correct, yeah. Like, unfortunately, we can't stop every rule being broken in a park. So.
But when something does go wrong, we have these policies in place.
Exactly. Yes.
You're liable.
And then we say we do have these rules
in
place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like us to see a list of places you're potentially thinking would be acceptable for these, so we could kind of think it goes through in our head a little bit at some point.
I think of it in two ways. One is I think of it from the perspective of what you're saying, right? Like, where are places that we think would be safer or interesting for folks, but the other side of it is, as a drone user, I think about, okay, they're coming to us as it is. Where are they flying? Where do they want to be flying? And a lot of times there may be conflict with those two, because I think, for example, Vancouver Lake and Freshman's Bar, those are great places, the views, the amenities out there, but are those places where we want to have a designated spot, like, or not? Would we prohibit them from using those locations, if those are the locations that people are repeatedly asking us?
To me, those are where a lot of our wildlife is. I mean, we've got the sandhill cranes, we've got ospreys, we've got, to me, there's just too many birds down there.
I don't want a drone flying over.
Let them pick it, but it's, okay. I mean, if you go to the public and get them to tell you where they want it, that's fine with me. I'd rather you would. But I really want from you guys a recommended list.
We'll try to pick out a few undeveloped properties.
Yeah, I think if we say there's designated areas, we need to have designated areas. Right.
And then areas that it's fit these policies.
Yeah.
And we got to be careful because some of our properties, you know, like that one, is surrounded by homes.
Yep.
We just want to make sure that they're not in people's backyards, you know.
Yeah.
It's all these drones have got cameras.
I get this is a form of recreation, but really this is what the parks are for, is to cater to technology. Like, that's just kind
okay.
of
well, good.
It's good to see progress on this, though, Eric.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
I think our plan, as far as code, September, October-ish, you know, we'll start really diving into that. That's our plan.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so on the field trips, the attached flyer.
Yeah.
And we changed the date to, you've got the new date on the flyer itself. Okay, great.
I did. So on the screen flyer here. So we kind of put a schedule, if you will, together. So if you look on the left-hand side, it says list of projects, location, schedule for this tour. I'm going to take you kind of, we're going to start at Camp Curry because we got that sewer line project that was recently done. And it is, I'd like to take you down that driveway that's been improved so you can see it. And that's going to be the trail connection that takes us to the Lapis Heritage Trail. So I'm working with Jerry. Jerry was with the city of Kansas to make that connection. And so that'll be the first stop. And then the Lapis Lake North Shore, like where the Ledbetter Mansion is at, that'll be our next stop, which is just down the road from Camp Curry. And then just after that, we have Lapis Lake Park. I'd like to show you that as well. And then we'll head out to Washougal Greenway, and we'll meet up with Suzanne Grover to talk about that piece of property that we're acquiring. So actually, the two Conservation Futures projects are number 2 and 4, but I'd like to ramp up the tour just a little bit to make it a little more intriguing for you. Sound good? So now the other sites, we decided not to go there because you're going to be driving by and not really seeing anything. You know, like the big acquisition of Yakult Forest. It's just
forest.
3 miles of spruce forest. Here's what we're getting.
Forest.
You know, and so that's all you're going to see. There's no place to really get out and take a look. I don't want to waste your time to drive in North County just to look out the window at trees. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Same thing with the farming lands. So.
So we leave from where? Here? Or
78th Street Operations.
78th.
Yeah. So it'll be good. We'll have fun like we always do. So that's coming up here pretty soon, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thursday. Two weeks.
Okay. And I mean, we have confirmed so far.
Five
already?
Yeah. Trying to get my schedule cleared off.
Hope to have you come along. That'd be great.
All right. So, community liaison update. Name tags. I can tell you that we've got them now. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
So, events coming up.
One thing that's not on here that, Barbara, I'm assuming you put it on our Facebook page. Is the trail cam?
Yeah, I put that there.
Yeah, so the info is on our Facebook page.
That's really bad timing, other than it's national dates, when it's done, because it conflicts with the county fair.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not sure that they get a really accurate count, but, you know, Karen doesn't have any impact on that.
Yeah. So your post says September 11th through the 13th from 5 to 7 is what?
Oh, well, I could be wrong. I have it on my personal calendar wrong then.
Okay.
Because I was supposed to, I thought, work on Saturday and then said, no, I can't.
Yeah, you have the 11th through the 13th from 5
Never
to
mind.
7.
Disregard my
okay.
calendar.
And the 15th through 16th.
Yeah, because I declined my sign up.
Okay.
Because I had to go to see my grandkids show their steers.
Oh, there you go.
Well, So Barbara put the RSVP link too on the Facebook page as well. So anyways, that would be cool. I'll try to do at least one shift. So thank you for putting that up, Barbara, because I didn't catch that.
Well, I think it's real important that we get enough people to cover it, only because that's what enhances our grant requests.
Yeah.
The other thing they're working on is the day of service, September 11th.
Yes, and I posted something about that when Karen sent me like a reminder date, but do you know if there's any more information about that I can share yet? Like what, because Karen was like, we really don't know what we're going to be doing at this point.
Only if it's on the link.
On the link, okay. Day of service. I'll check into it too. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Dogpaw, new updates. Is there any new updates?
Well, I guess I could share with you what I heard at the Animal Protection. And
Yes, please.
Sorry, John, I just dug around in all my stack and found my little scribble notes. It was really interesting to attend the meeting because I think they were in the same position as we were, which was, what can we really do here? And they boiled down to one gal suggested that they form a subcommittee to discuss it. Sound familiar? All right. And, of course, my feeling there was the same with us. It was a delaying tactic, and the solution really is not within our hands. But there was one really interesting point that was brought up. First of all, they are already advertising for the administrative positions to support animal control. He said he's advertising for two. And we asked the question why it was not the officers that they were going after, and it had to do with the amount of training and to be inundated with all this training at one time. Currently, they've got, two part-time, hoping to add a third office to focus more on licensing. Oh, okay. He's advertising for two part-time managers and then one outside vendor. And two of the assistants will be what he calls critter getters. And that means that they're going to try to focus on controlling licensing. And we said, well, how are you going to do that door to door? And he says, well, we don't have it locked up yet. So they're adding to it. But the big problem was they currently had, they said, two full-time employees that work, you know, in animal control. And that includes, and they're bypassing a lot of work that needs to be done on the equestrian side. Believe it or not, the equestrians were there at that meeting as well. The problem being that at times, I mean, they're so thin that they are working 7 days a week and frequently go months without a day off. Reading exhaustion. Number two, there are times where they get into what can be considered dangerous positions when they've got a vicious animal, for example, and they don't have someone in backup in the car with them. And I thought that the gal from the Humane Society actually brought a solution to the table that was viable, where she said, their volunteers at the Humane Society, they actually have more than what they need. And what these officers really need for safety's sake is really a ride-along pal. And so they're going to start leveraging the volunteers from the Humane Society just to do ride-alongs with them.
That's a great
And I thought, whoa, a little bit of relief, if not a day off, because they're not licensed or trained or anything, but it's at least a relief on the safety side. Now, I see that they've got, with the new regime that's falling into play, that they're doing double time, trying to catch up, but he has a real specific plan in place for adding headcount. The biggest drawback is the one gentleman that has been doing it as an outside contractor, and they said he'd been doing it for some god-awful amount of time, like 3-5 years, is going to retire. And so filling that gap is really a pusher for them, because they won't have him very soon. But he does have this plan, has put in the budgetary thing, but he also voiced the same thing as we did, that we need to bring our voices to county council to encourage and support this, because we all know any solution is going to take money. And it's not going to happen if they don't feel some pressure. And I did suggest to them that if they do a subcommittee, that we would likely be willing to work with them instead of having two separate ones, that the synergy of combining. But it was a good meeting. But they pretty much came up with the same thing as us, which is totally supported. Yeah, changes got to be made. We need to fix this, but no real answers.
I know they're going through the interviews and practical exams next week with the new officers. And so I'm working with Bob Berquist, who's actually asking for some of our practical exams so they can utilize them for training for their officers. And so sounds like help is on the way. You know, those folks on board, that we get them trained.
Well, they said it would take 2 years to fully train them.
Yeah, it's probably going to take some time to get them fully trained for all the responsibility.
But they should be out in the field before they
They said they were going to
focus on ride-along training more than anything, just in the fact that if I'm training you, I can't be in the field when you've only got two officers to start with.
So we meet with Mitch Nichols and Bob Berquist on Monday to talk about, you know, trying to wrap up the issues with DogPaw. DogPaw, we're meeting with them on September 3rd, so Mark Watson and his board, so Mitch Nichols and I. And so if you guys want to come along too, welcome. I'll send you an official invite.
Yeah, let us know. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be out of conference room B1 over in operations. Okay. I think it's on a Wednesday, the 3rd, at like 6 o'clock in the evening. So we'll send you an invite so you can be there for that as well. So.
Will somebody from the Humane Society be involved with that?
More than likely. I think they show up to all of those DogPaw board meetings.
Yeah, the gal that represents on this board.
Who is it? You forget to tell them. Sorry.
It's the 3rd, Bill. That's Labor Day.
But she's a doctor.
It's the first as well Wednesday.
The 5th.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
I wasn't sure what day it was on, but I know it's like the first Wednesday of the month.
Okay.
So our health, remember the letter that Mark sent out?
Yes.
We have until the end of August. We want to make sure that we get a response back to them from me and Mitch Nichols, probably more importantly from him, because he's the one that's got the officers, that we are going to respond with an adequate solution. So I have to get that to them probably this next week. We'll share that with what we discuss. I asked Mitch about a week and a half ago to provide me a response letter that is suitable for public release, and I think this meeting on Monday, we'll probably try to draft that and get it done. So our intent is to make sure that we satisfy DogPaw's concerns. So.
Totally.
All right.
Go ahead. No. I was just going to say, I had a conversation with Stacy Graham from Humane Society.
Uh-huh.
They have quite a different view of what's going on with DogPaw. So I think it's important to have them at the table.
Yes.
I don't want to get into it because it's very complicated, but I just want them to get their views of that on the table as well.
Absolutely.
So we don't just hear one side of the story.
Yeah, and I also heard that DogPaw, the board themselves, they really, really want to keep this agreement with us going on.
That's exactly what I heard, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So that puzzles me then, because wouldn't their board have voted to send us that ultimatum letter, essentially?
Some question whether they did or not.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, that changes things a lot now, doesn't it?
So,
yikes, okay.
So Mark might be speaking a little bit more on his own behalf, you know, out of frustration.
Okay.
And on behalf of his board. So,
yeah.
So that's what I want to kind of discover as well. So I've never met with a DogPaw board in any recent history. I'd like to meet with them and have that discussion with them.
I think that's important at this point to have a,
That was the feeling I got from Stacy, that we needed to hear more than just from
Mark's point of view.
Okay, yeah.
I also heard him say something about that our county enforcement folks are also doing the same. There's a kind of an agreement
between
the counties. Utilize the county's enforcement personnel.
And the interesting point that was made, and thanks, Melotta, because that slipped my mind until now, that Vancouver actually gets priority dispatch over us.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they said that in the meeting.
I do know that there's a contract.
Because of the contract. So if they get two calls, one in unincorporated Clark County, one in Vancouver, they go to the Vancouver one.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's why we need more officers.
Or we need Vancouver to have their own animal control department where they take care of their own needs.
Well, economies of scale.
But are we charging them?
Yes.
When's the last time we've raised?
No, of course we are.
Well, no, I know that. But are we when's the last time we've raised the rates?
Oh, I don't know that.
That would be some more questions.
Supposedly, Julie Hannon is she put into a budget request to afford an animal control officer
for Vancouver.
Yeah. So I don't know if she's going to get it or not, but I think that she said that she did put in a request. So to find out if that's the case, that would actually afford another additional officer that they could bring on board just to handle Vancouver, which makes sense to me.
And how many of our dog parks are in Vancouver city limits?
Just one.
Just is it Dakota?
No.
No.
The Ross Complex, which is actually BPA land. Bottom of Power Administration lands.
And what Mark was telling me is we're not even supposed to call, like, Clark County sheriffs aren't even technically supposed to go on the property because it's federal.
That's
what he told me.
Yeah.
So
it would be city police, actually. City of Vancouver police, because it's in the city of Vancouver.
Oh, true. Okay. But he said even then, you're not supposed, I don't know, it's some very confusing, don't step on my toes sort of bureaucracy.
Yeah, well, they have their own enforcement authority.
Correct.
So.
Which makes it weird.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
But all the other off-leash areas are ours in the county.
Okay.
Another casualty of our divorce.
Correct.
Yeah.
Who gets the kids?
Of course, there's also a problem with training the new personnel because there's no training available except outside of the area. So maybe Mr. Nichols should be encouraged to have some local training. And maybe look also to Portland, Vancouver, and Clark to maybe form a specific training group.
They said there was some training up in Eastern Washington, some formal training.
Still outside the county or outside?
Yeah, it's outside the county.
Still out the county. Okay, so more to come.
Yeah,
obviously. Now that we're starting to hear different people.
Oh, I'll send the letter out to Mr. Nichols. Send the draft one. And
yeah,
that'll be great. To you right away. Okay, so you can see it. Comment before we send about the dog park.
Great.
All right.
Appreciate that. All right. Development Engineering Advisory Board update. Kelsey, you want to take that?
Oh, sure. First of all, thanks to everyone who showed up to the meeting.
Yes.
That was awesome. Definitely made me less nervous seeing some friendly faces out there. So took some encouraging things away from it, took some discouraging things away from it. A little disappointed that we've only had one person from their board say they're interested in a subcommittee. So what I'd like to do at our meeting today is figure out who we want on our subcommittee or who wants to participate, and then email them and say, all right, this is who we have. Do you guys have a couple more people so we can get this thing moving forward? If so, please let us know their names. And I was kind of just thinking of going and email us your first proposal of what you envision us being able, you know, it's kind of like the beginnings of negotiations. What is it you want? And then that way we can review that before our first meeting, subcommittee meeting with them, and then go forward from there. So it's a starting point. I want to kind of know what everyone feels, though, if they only have one person. Do we just then say, okay, we tried? Because I just feel like we can't have a subcommittee with one person from their team speaking on their whole.
They can try to reach out again and try to push it a little bit more.
So do you think if we come back and say, all right, we have these three people.
I think they will step up. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think this is an item that they're going to press on.
I'm worried they won't step up because they already feel like they have the political will to have the counselors do what they ask without talking to us. Well, that's my concern.
I think that makes it even, in my opinion, more important for us to reach our hand
and
out
keep pushing.
In a mode of wanting to come together, work together, and find a solution together, because otherwise we look like we're... I want to just lay it out there and say we're trying to work this out, and I think that carries a lot of weight when someone sees someone become aggressive mm-hmm. when the other one is reaching.
Or just completely checked out and not
yes.
participating.
Well, then we know that.
So, you know, even if it doesn't go forward, I support moving forward with...
Okay. I like your plan, except, you know, I believe we stated there that we thought 3 and 3 would be the right number to have on the subcommittee so we can put our 3 forward, if you will.
If we even get 2 from them, though.
Well, if we get 2 from them, that's yeah. fine. My thought is, instead of asking them what their first position is and then setting a meeting, I would set the meeting and say on the agenda is we want you to bring to us your thoughts and what your goals are. And then we can bring what our goals are.
Yeah.
And then that way we have a date for them to, because if we don't, they'll go, oh, well, we'll get back to you on that at our next meeting or our next meeting. And I'm worried they'll use that as to push off. So that's why I say, let's put our 3 candidates forward, or 3 people forward, and set a date that we'd like to have the meeting, and we need to make it after their
monthly
September
meeting.
Yeah, their monthly September meeting. Yeah.
And I think that's a good approach, because when you ask them and you tell me before the meeting what you want, so I'm prepared for it. That's not the partnering that we'll both bring to the table.
Yeah.
Our issues is more of a partnering.
Yeah, my point is to more make yeah. them have a date that they need to get something
sure.
done by.
Absolutely.
If we don't, they
yeah,
won't.
It accomplishes
yeah.
the same thing, but the message
yeah.
is a
oh,
little
yeah.
different.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah.
So
that would be the only change I would make.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what to bring to the table from our side, because I don't want to, how do I say this? I don't want to give away anything in advance that they're not asking for.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think,
exactly.
I think
so,
you just bring our cheat sheets again, if you will, for lack of better terminology, our little concerns, and have our first meeting and ask them to bring theirs.
And I think we bring more information, like we were discussing the formula
yeah.
for
right.
how we
absolutely.
Calculated
right.
the PIP increase.
Yep.
That's kind of what I would want to come armed with.
I think that our primary objective is to help them become more comfortable
with the fee.
With the PIF as it is, why it's a good thing for them, and it's very cost effective.
And I think your argument about they're not saying to the people who poured foundations for them 13 years ago, they're
yeah.
not asking them to freeze their prices right
no,
now.
Right.
So to ask us to decrease or freeze ours, and ours were...
is not reasonable.
It's not reasonable. I mean, it just seems like we're taking the brunt of, you know,
yeah.
some of this. And it's not reasonable
yeah.
to ask.
And they get such a benefit from it.
10%, according to Diana.
Well, at least that. If you read it, and that's hard facts and data from national statistics.
Yeah.
Some areas it's higher, depending upon how close you are.
Yeah. So I really, you know, I want to, they seem very, they flat out said it's too long for them to wait till 2020 to get any relief.
I think we should restate that we think it isn't too long because of the effort that we go through every cycle and the time and money we spend for that cycle.
Yeah.
Well, how much we spend? $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not cheap money. That's
no,
real
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
So
and
you've
got the trails coming up anyway.
We ought to
the thoughts of
it. Tell them that we don't believe that's a legitimate thing to do in the time frame. And I think that's an argument we could make with the county council.
Absolutely.
I think they'll listen to that.
Yeah, and I'm willing to, like we all said, have these discussions about giving them credits for the parks they're building, but it has to be built into a comprehensive plan.
Right.
Like, it can't be we're giving you this land, we're building you this park here, like that, I'm sorry, I can't operate.
Well, any wetland.
Yeah.
I think you need to read the information that Laura put together on the different locations, because almost all of them, in fact, are, my understanding is, from what I briefly looked at it, is we do allow PIF credits, but it has to be on approved things that are approved facility, public facilities that are already in the plan.
Right.
So that's where there's going to be a little, it's a nuance, but it's also a rule, and therefore there would have to be a rule change. There'd have to be to get to where they can just give us any land there. Now, they may argue that their plan is when the plat comes up and we say this is a park area and it's all signed off, then that's part of the public facilities and it's now in the public realm. But you don't sign plats, do you, as park? See, and that's a flaw, I think.
Dave is addressing that today.
Mm-hmm. No, you still want to be signing.
No, it's just a land designation, I think.
Yeah. What we're going to have to do in the PROS plan, the capital facilities plan, is identify developments, because we're not going to know which developments are going to be looked at or approved on for the next 6 years. So it has to be open-ended enough, but we also have to have a process in place that we establish ground rules.
That's right. And that's the key.
But so if we say, developer approved, parks, if you will, but it has to meet all the criteria, that should be in the PROS plan.
Correct, yeah.
So we want it to be completely spelled out so it does follow code.
I thought you opened the door where we could give a percentage of credit for certain things. And even to the point where if they provide a corridor that allows pedestrians to go from a cul-de-sac out to a major road, and that's a trail but not a park. I mean, it's a public open trail. I think that's legitimate. We don't have that right now. So there's room for things like that to be plugged in.
Yes.
I just use that as one example. But there are ways to do this.
Right.
But I want to do it in the cycle that we are in, not in the cycle they want us to be in. And I think the argument with the board is strong that we spend a lot of money doing these plans. Sure. We should do them professionally and in a timely fashion.
And that they should be more involved in the next session in terms of saying
when they want
we're envisioning
to,
yeah. maybe
they were
having
in the
a
last
development.
One. We had many meetings with them before.
They were included.
I'm not saying they weren't included. Yeah. I'm just saying how much they were proactive in advocating for certain, like, Bill, best case scenario, how quickly could they get PIF credits for trails?
Well, they were pretty vocal about it.
They were very vocal before. We listened to them, and we went through the process.
As soon as next year. I mean, after right now, we are talking about, we're actually doing it right now, we're updating the PIF program to include trails.
Okay.
Right? That's where we've got Steve with Conservation Techniques working on. He's also looking at consolidation of PIF districts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can also take a look at what we're talking about with DEEP, because since we got it open, we're going to be making some changes. Let's make some changes. And then once it gets approved by the board, then thereafter we can do what we need to do.
So pretty quickly, some relief in terms of PIF credits for trails we can offer.
Yes.
One thing I'm concerned about, and I want everyone else's take on, is two people mentioned going and looking at the parks and their developments right now and counting that towards the level of service. I'm a no on that.
I'm a no on that.
Well, private parks and the schools, I don't agree with that.
Well, we already had a huge discussion on the schools during the
PROS battle. We've fought that battle every six years now since I've been involved in parks.
But my point is on the ones in developments, I actually drove around to several looking for, like the one, the Firestone build out that was just down the street from me. It initially had plans for a park, and he wanted park credits for it too, and yada yada yada. There's nothing there. Zip. There's Greenway area by Whipple Creek. Well, you can't let kids go play there. That doesn't count. And even down in Phillida, in the new Erickson Farms one, I'm sorry. that little playground they got there does not ring my chimes.
Well, and it's to residents use only, so I don't know how we would go back and retroactively figure out all of this information.
Not, they just do not meet standards.
I agree.
And they're yeah.
If somebody can prove this one does meet the standards and they're willing to turn it over as a public to the whole
space.
Public.
Yeah.
So be it. You tell us that
I think you're okay
with it, and we'll do it.
I think the key is if we use the subcommittee to document, if nothing else, document these concerns.
Right.
Because right now it's all verbal and we're all, you know.
Yeah, I just went there before our deed meeting.
No, that's fine.
Because I can have misconceptions. So I wanted to go look to see if I had.
I can't believe you
asked. So a couple of things we talked about at that meeting was, they're trying to keep affordable housing affordable, you know. So they're looking at the footprint and says, you know, hindering that ability to do that.
And I have a hard time.
They're talking about, you know, working certainly with them on property acquisition because I think we're paying way more than what they would be paying for property.
Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I mean, I worked with a developer on buying a piece of property, and we went off yellow book appraisal. That's what I had to pay. You know, I was a part of a much larger tract of land to all of the property. You know, I paid full price for it. You know, I didn't get a deal because I was working with a developer. But, so I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but if the developer were to give it to us at a discounted rate, then yeah, we're fine.
And that's the key is, I think when they talk about a discounted price, they can acquire land, you know,
in bulk,
or they can acquire it as they go and get some pricing up front early. Now, when I was in the development business, the last piece of property we had was usually the value the highest because we had all our residual costs thrown into that. And if that's a piece of parkland, they're not doing us any favors.
Right.
No.
You know, we're not getting any costs.
And the one that they want to hand off is typically...
It's typically not the best.
I mean, there might be some kind of...
Nobody bought it for a reason.
I mean, I want to get that door open. If we can...
Well, we have to keep every door open.
Oh, yeah. No. I think we have to, Because it could, and they can install equipment faster, better, and they'll have crews there. So I think that's the thing is we've got to keep the benefits
that
on
is
each
where
side,
that could be valuable.
And how do we get these benefits to lock in with each other to where we can go forward together to the council and say, hey, you know, we've got an idea here. This is where we'd like to go. And if we can do it together, then it's a much better situation.
So strategically, what are you looking for members on your subcommittee? Because I think, like Dave, who knows so much, would be
you
a
can't
bad
be on the subcommittee.
Well, I was just going to say, it would appear to be a conflict of interest for him, and maybe be very difficult for him in his work position.
Right.
Oh. But his knowledge base is what you need, but...
That's why we just ask him questions.
Answer questions.
Sure.
He could be staff support.
So you could kind of bridge the information gaps that, you know, with us, that'd be great.
I envision us mostly sitting here and really trying to say, like, we put a lot of thought into our park system, and here's the evidence that we've used to do this. I'm willing to negotiate on, like, I'm stuck with Kelly. I'm stuck with Kelly on we just can't say, yes, this counts now, without standards. So I envision us working as a team to, on their side and our side, to create standards of what PIF credits look like in the future. I think, based on what they said they want to decrease the PIF fee. So we've got to figure out how we're going to respond to that. I'm hoping that we can respond to with, we'll give you the PIF credits for the trails. I don't think that's going to be enough. But what I envision the subcommittee doing is trying to figure out a set of standards moving forward for our next plan.
Well, a recommendation to staff, because it really comes from staff at the end.
Well,
thing with a credit, I don't think anyone can reasonably expect there not to be a criteria. I mean, if you're getting traffic impact credit, there's a criteria that you are meeting to get that credit. I mean, I think anyone would expect criteria. So I don't think that necessarily should be an issue. Definitely.
I just feel like that's the bridge building component of the committee.
That's where two need to come together and figure that out.
This is where we can be holding hands and happy. Mm-hmm. And then I think you're going to have the other two components of them saying we want this decrease and us being like we're not comfortable with that. And how we figure that out from there.
So who do we feel should be on the committee from our side? Who are the three that we want to put through on that committee?
I would be using examples.
And Dave's out, if you will.
Okay. Kelly's is.
Kelly is too excited and passionate about it.
And well, aren't we all?
Well, no,
Barbara, I would like you to be on it if you could, just because you know so much.
I don't know much about building as well.
Yeah, but you
I don't
know
either.
About
you know a lot about.
You know all about what went into the tip increase.
I'd be happy to, but these guys that know about, you know, facts and data, you know how I feel about facts and data.
Well, you're not afraid to ask us about it either. So, you know, we're all going to be on top of this. It's just, right.
John, you always come with such a calm, reasonable attitude.
We put him on the railroad committee.
We don't need him on the railroad. We need him on D.
I know, but I just feel like we can't stick him on anything else right now.
They're the best soldiers.
We punish him.
I'll just quietly note that Kevin isn't here to defend himself at the moment.
Well, he's a lock then to be on the committee. That's
okay. Oh, good point. He would be.
I mean,
good.
I'd like to be on it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's.
So, I make a motion to have Kevin.
So, Kevin, Barb, and Kelsey.
I'm okay to be on it. I just
don't you have work that your engineering staff?
No. I'm an engineer and I have done this before. But
well, then
no,
you'd
I'm
be
not,
a good one.
I'm not anything currently going on, so you know I'm with BPA. So
let's take someone who's willing.
I think that's a good
well, Mary,
mix, though.
Well,
so technically, you have a lot of background in history in the Carson County.
Yeah.
Okay, so right. Jay, Kelsey, and Barbara. What's our acronym? We need something snazzy here. KJB. Almost a KGB. Dang it.
Sorry.
<No. laughs> All right.
My middle name's
well,
not George either, so yeah, think on it.
Okay. So, and then maybe we three will meet if they respond and say, yeah, let's move forward to kind of figure out what documents
make sure we're
want
on
to bring.
The same page.
Well, I don't think we ask the question. We say, we be proactive and say, we've set our subcommittee.
Yeah, okay.
Please forward us your subcommittee nominees or who's going to be on your subcommittee, and then we'd like to meet and let's pick a date
well,
2 weeks after their
suggest them, ask them. Is there a time that's
a couple
better?
Of dates is there, during is the week there a, of
because
level.
Their people they meet predominantly at night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe during the day, which works for us, may not work for them. So we might say, here's three dates and time.
Okay.
Okay.
And all then right. I bet you Laura can help us find a room.
I'll try to send that by Monday. That'll be my goal. Okay.
Yeah, they won't meet again until what, September 2nd or?
Yeah.
I think that's their next.
I kept their agenda in here just in case.
Yeah, it's the September. Well, that's this is the old agenda.
Their last one. But I was hoping
it's the first Thursday, I think.
Was it the first Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we have it here as September 2nd, upcoming meeting, the DEA board.
September 6th.
Oh, okay.
So I think we've got Laura Lebowski and I are presenting on the Fifth Trails.
Okay.
Maybe I'll go to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you need support in that?
Yeah, that'd be great. If you want to come, that would be fantastic.
Oh, and that's
you're on the agenda already.
I'm on the agenda. Yeah, we're on the agenda.
Park impact the district boundaries, yeah. Lebowski.
It's like the second week of kindergarten, too, so I don't know how emotionally strong our household will be.
Okay, so we'll have
everyone
some.
Still
so you've got September 2nd, 6th, is the DEA board that you're presenting, you and Laura. Laurie.
It's tough now, so we can punch it on getting more members, subcommittee members.
And then who's the gentleman that's the liaison between the county and them?
Greg Schaefer.
Greg Schaefer. So that's who we should communicate with, is I'm assuming?
Yes.
Present our three, you know, send a note.
Just send it to him and not their board,
right.
Too.
I would send it to him
and pass it on.
Yeah. CC their board or have
I would CC them? Their board, yeah.
Okay.
Don't you think so?
Yeah or no?
I would say yes to that. And then that way, we know officially we made the overture, and then unofficially to all our true board members that they are aware of it. So if one of them says, well, I never heard of this or whatever, we've got it covered. Yeah.
That's a good way.
So then it falls in there.
Because that's really what we're going to do is a paper trail.
That's part of this game, if you will, and I don't mean it disrespectfully, but it is throw the ball in their court as much as possible to make them perform, honestly.
And bringing a willing heart.
And to bring and to make it where they will openly come back to us. So yes. Okay.
So we get into an active negotiation.
Yeah, and I think we should monitor your progress on the trails and their reaction because that could be a vehicle. I'll call it a test vehicle to get in and see what credits, maybe partial credits, what kind of criteria maybe work. Because, I mean, like you said, Kelly, if it goes from a cul-de-sac out to a main road, we call it a little trail, we give them a little credit for that, because it will give
public benefit. As long as that's approved in the subdivision plan.
Right.
So that would be a plan. It wouldn't be our plan, but it used to be.
Well, and that's the public facility plan again. And I think that's a nuance we need to make sure that everybody's aware of. Okay. Do we get where you need to be?
I think so, yeah. I have no idea where this is taking us.
None of us do. I just remember the flight attendant, put your tray backs up and tie your seat belts. It may be a little turbulence.
It'll be a bumpy ride.
It may be a little turbulence. Just remember where the exits are. The emergency exits. All right. New biz.
Okay, Anderson Acquisition. So we have toured the property that we're going to acquire. So this is the Anderson property right here, 9 acres. And so we came here and kind of stopped right here and looked this way at it. So barn, house, all that. We signed the option agreement so that it's actually officially started. And then we executed the appraisal process. So I think we're about, 2 weeks, week and a half into the appraisal process right now. It's going to be about a 5-week term. And then in our option agreements, because we've got other projects that are tasking the PIP funds, like the disc golf course at Hawkinson, and Otto Brown is in the same district. I wanted to delay the actual purchase of the property until we have enough money to afford it. So we asked that we could hold off on the actual purchase and sale agreement until approximately about March of next year, just to make sure we've got the funding. So they agreed to that, and so that's what's in the option agreement. And so as of March, if the money comes in sooner, we'll make the purchase sooner. So we don't know what the appraisal is gonna be, but she has in her mind what that target that she wants is going to be. If it comes in higher than that target amount, this 1.8, I believe, she says she will. The plan is to donate that extra funding.
What's the zoning?
R110. So we'll see where that comes in. But I'm curious to see what that appraisal is going to. What's
going
to be?
The zoning is what?
The appraisal is going to include
R110 or R10? 110. 10 acre or 10,000?
10,000.
Okay.
Well,
it says R110. Yeah. So it's there?
Not all. So is there every designation of 10,000 square feet?
Let me double check that one. Yeah, let's double check.
I didn't know if it was on the border or if it was.
The parcel information page is in the package.
Next page. There you go.
Oh, it's so good.
Cool.
Page 2.
Got it covered.
You sure do.
R110.
Okay.
Single family residential. So after going back and forth, for several months, we finally got the option agreement signed, which I was happy to see. And then we almost had to kick that over the dirt. So they had some interesting requests, like
This is late and all the stipulations.
Way out of my realm. So, So we're anxious to get that piece. We've been looking for a piece in that area. So we're very close to the eastern area of 55. And so it's going to really fill a nice gap. This right here is all being developed right now. The homes are being built right here. So the one thing I didn't do on the tour, we should have taken you down farther, since where Chester Bolt grew up. His brother's farm.
Oh, really?
And so he knew Linda Anderson really well, and he actually put this deal together for us. That's kind of cool.
And it's an awesome barn.
That's actually an actual farm. It's kind of like Beasy Farms. You can go there and buy fresh produce and all that kind of stuff. So if you get a chance to go and check that out, it's really neat.
We could keep the barn and do home downs.
So the barn, our plan.
It'd be our community center.
It's a really, really nice barn in great shape, and the whole thing is turned into a big shelter, a big one. So that'll be cool. We'll get like the centroid, if you will, of the park.
Special spots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Salmon Creek.
I'm going to have to reconsider and keep the property, though. I'm sorry.
What's that?
Anderson. It's got my name on it.
Well, she did ask that question, and I said, well, if we can pay for the price for it, then the problem's like, well, but as part of our policy, if there's a pretty substantial donation, then naming rights might be...
One of the things I was going to bring up at the end of the meeting was that we find a property name for Mark Bull for his time with us now that he's no longer going to be here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make that suggestion that maybe this would be the right size to go.
Anyway,
he has made a difference in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Salmon Creek and Klein Line Park.
Want to join in this one again, Eric?
Open, close.
So just so you know, Eric is in charge of the lifeguard program down there. He runs that group, and they're doing a fantastic job, by the way. They saved the lives lately, so it's pretty amazing. I think we're talking about the condition of the water. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah. I wanted just kind of an update on water quality in the park.
It's on again, off again. It's been closed, and then I think it just got reopened as of. So
what happens is we partner with Public Health. Public Health tests the water quality for us at Vancouver Lake and at Klein Line Pond on a weekly basis from essentially Memorial Day through Labor Day. And then when test levels come back at an elevated level, then they go back and retest, and then they make a determination if there needs to be any action taken or if it needs to be a warning level or if it needs to be closed, either body of water, at least at the beaches. Vancouver Lake, we've had a warning level for a few weeks now. It's not unusual for this time of year, so we do have signs posted, and then we inform folks as they come in. At Klein Line, they tested high for E. coli a couple of weeks ago, posted warning signs, retested, removed the signs. This week, it tested high and they closed. We closed the pond for the first time in probably 5 years. It was closed 2 days this week. We reopened yesterday at a warning level. They tested daily this week. So once that beach was closed, they tested daily. Got samples back again today, and the warning has been lifted. So it's open and back to full status as of probably within the hour.
So Vancouver Lake's the blue-green algae.
Correct.
Klein Line is kids in poopy diapers.
Yep.
So one question I had is, like, when you go to Battleground Lake, there's a sign up that says if your kid's not potty trained, they cannot go in the lake. And I didn't know that. And I had my girls, and they were in diapers. They had swim diapers on, but I was like, it said no swim, including swim diapers. So I didn't put them in Battleground Lake. Our code doesn't specify correct. I have several concerns. One, I want this. A lot of people, it's so hot, like, are looking for a place to cool down, and I want to have a clean water source for them. And two, how much money are we losing in parking fees when we're shutting this park down due to maybe some issues we could tweak? I mean, that's why we don't let dogs down there, correct?
Yes.
It's a health risk, too, because when that's closed, they're going to go to one of the rivers, potentially no lifeguards. And I mean, how many drownings a year, you know?
So the reason that there's a splash pad down there, in my mind, is for the small kids that shouldn't be in the pond, so they can have a place to play in the water. So even if the pond is closed, everybody flocks to the splash pad, and they use the heck out of that, which is a problem because I don't think the design, I mean, having a splash pad that is so close to a beach, a sandy beach,
not a good
everybody goes up there and washes their feet off, and it gets into the system, and it keeps shutting the system down because it's really, really tough on all that. And we need a series of sand traps, quite frankly, and that's been our biggest nemesis. We've also got grass clippings that are getting put in into the system. However, so and plus the system's getting pretty old; it's getting tired. So we're kind of bail wiring it together, and we're probably going to have to go out and buy a new $300,000 system if we're going to keep it running this next year.
And we should relocate it when we do that.
It should have been probably farther away from the beach, you know, not just across the walk. It should have been like a far side of the play equipment, so people have a chance to get their feet cleaned out on the way there. But that has been our biggest problem.
I will say that speaking to our staff, customers, lifeguards, the splash pad and the implementation of lifeguards has really made it has added to a family-friendly atmosphere.
Absolutely.
So it does have issues. It's not perfect. It's, you know, it's aging, but it definitely adds a tremendous amount of value to that.
Yeah, but it's not as old as, say, Holly Park, and that one is very reliable.
Are there functioning stations
there? It's definitely
there?
The sand is an issue.
No, there's not. That's one thing we talked about doing is like around the beach. Yeah.
My lifeguard managers and I have had some conversations about the building itself and how it works, how it doesn't work with relation to their operations, but also as it relates to the splash pad, and that's something that they talked about in terms of like a foot washing station or things that could help not only their operations but with the splash pad.
So I think that because of the splash pad being there, even if the pond is closed, we're still drawing people in because we still have a water feature that people can use.
Yeah.
Did you see a dip, Eric, when the pond is closed?
As far as
usage?
Yes, and I was just looking it up right now to give you a comparison.
I mean, because if we could just do maybe more public education
that's
to say, tell
is that
people,
where you were going with this?
Yeah, because I think people assume that a swim diaper is foolproof, and it's not. It just contains them from floating away as a mother of two small children. But the same stuff is getting in the water. So if we did maybe more education, we could keep that water cleaner so people could utilize it and feel not icky about using it, like, throughout the whole summer. Like, I've been seeing a lot of, in those comments I was reading on the Columbian, when it was open, when it was closed, when there were warnings, people were really just seemed frustrated because it's so hot. And that is a safe place to take smaller kids to play. That is the appeal of it, because you don't have currents like the Columbia River. And so I want to make sure that we're able to use this, and if we can just maybe hit it with a little more public education of science. Swim diapers do not act as, you know,
they're not sealed.
They're not sealed. Yeah. Just so we don't have to close it as often or put in warnings up, because, I mean, this has happened ever since I was a little girl. I mean, my mom would only take me there to swim in the early spring, because by the end of summer, this, I don't know. Yeah, I just want to throw it out there.
No, that's a good point, Kelsey.
What could we could partner with public health maybe more in educating people, and I don't know.
You know, something that I've noticed a lot, and want to be a strong advocate for Vancouver on this. That e-newsletter that they send out from Parks and Recreation is fabulous. And why doesn't the county have one more like that?
We have green news.
We got divorced, but...
Well, we can't do everything we could before. Yeah. I'm going to use that as an excuse of why... Because they've done it. I mean, we've lost a lot of services, and we need to keep reminding, because someday we're going to have to get our act together and get back together.
Well, I'm just going to say that I read that thoroughly because we don't have that information flow.
Yeah,
I think that's a critical thing, sharing information.
Absolutely.
There is not a good vehicle that we've got. What's the chance of You certainly have got a media person then.
We do. Jeff Myers from Public Works. I think he goes, you know, kind of.
But one more thing on his plate.
Yeah, he needs another rock in his sack.
What he needs. Yeah.
They're a little bit more broader based with staffing to allow. They have a recreation staff, and it's kind of nice.
Well, what other vehicles would you offer that might be used for getting information out?
Just a matter of
a Facebook page, but it doesn't have that many yet.
Just making it a priority to get it done, you know, the information, and just having the staff person to do that.
And people don't bring their dogs in the Klein line because they see the sign.
Yeah.
And I'm very naive in human nature. I understand this, but I like to envision that if we had more signs up in the park, there's signs that say don't bring your dog. People don't bring their dogs. If we could maybe publicize more, the splash pad is for kiddos who aren't potty trained. Please don't let your unpotty trained kids enter the pond. Like, maybe just more outreach at the park with some signage.
I would think public some health gets a lot of grants for signs and stuff, so.
Yeah.
I would, because I really want to, my girls like going down there, but in the back of my head, I'm always like, ew, a little bit when I'm there, and I don't want to always have that kind
that
of like,
do.
Are you ew. In E. coli right now? Like.
So the simplest thing we can do is every car that comes in that pays a parking fee, we hand them rules. We staple rules to the receipt, so we could. Couple things we could potentially do is I would just look at what our rules sheet says on there,
yeah.
And that could be a point of emphasis. It could be on the receipt
that
we hand out because the receipts are customizable, but also just frankly verbally as they're coming in.
When you see little
to let
ones
them
in the
know,
car.
Say hey, as a rule, and they do when people come in, they tell them a number. There are a number of things that. You know, we try to advise people, but at some point we have to stop and tell folks stuff because
it's so long.
The line will just be too long, but that's a pretty important.
Yeah. We might be able to get some additional. I know there's a lot of signs down there already, but more signs that.
Yeah, but I have to say, I didn't know that. I did not know that. You.
Well, in addition to that, not only at the fee booth, but we also have when we have lifeguards on duty.
Yeah.
We'll have a number of lifeguards that can.
Does our code allow us to exclude non-potty trained children from the pond? Would we have to add that into
that
the code?
We have a no water contact code, but it's just no water contact, period. So it's all or nothing kind of a code.
So it's something we'd have to add if we want to enforce it?
Yes.
It just,
by the
pond. I mean,
if it's being done elsewhere.
I mean, Battleground Lakes is pretty firm on it because they have the same issue, I think, with the eco.
Would you make a point of. We're losing parking. If we have to close for everybody for a small segment, it's hurting us too.
And we're still appeasing the people who are bringing little kids in there, saying, "Oh, we have the splash pad, we have the playground, they can still play on the beach and stuff." But
well, that's an amendment that we can make to the code because it does state in our code that no dogs inside the park or on the turf at Vancouver Lake. That's in our code.
Yeah.
You know, so we can make a specific statement saying no potty-trained kids or unpotty-trained kids in the pond.
Yeah, and because if we're keeping dogs from pooping in the grass, but we're letting kids poop in the water, I don't really know if that's doing anything, in the grand scheme of trying to keep the water clean.
Well, E. coli is showing up. So.
Yeah, so I would like to, I don't want to be a huge harpy on this, but I think we can improve the water quality if we put a little more emphasis on education and signage.
We also have a problem with waterfowl, actually.
Oh, the geese there? They're awful there.
They're actual contributors to that as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so we actually do try to control overpopulations of geese and ducks. We have to be relocated.
I could help you with that.
Melana had a question.
Yeah, of course, historically speaking, that portion of the Salmon Creek watershed where the Salmon Creek runs through it has been in a red zone identified by EPA and had been signed before. Because of the upstream pollution, because of the septic tanks up there, because of the horse farms and other farms and everything else that's rolling down towards Klein Line. But it's not just the off-site point source pollution and contamination, it's coming from upstream. So I think at one point in time, one of the EPA officers was actually moving as well, actually, at the issue citation against the county. So it needs to be on a more, we're at higher level cooperation and collaboration as well, because this is a public health safety welfare of everybody who's using that park. but it also comes from off-site pollution source, not just on-site pollution source.
So we want to know.
How much we dipped. What did we dip? It was bad, wasn't it?
We don't do a huge number at this time of year.
Really?
Well, I'll just tell you what the numbers are.
Yeah.
We did last year, this whole week, Monday through Friday, we had a little just over 1,000 transactions, which was gross of about $3,200. That was 2017. 2018, we did, so far this week, not through the end of today, we've done 314 transactions.
That's a big dip.
For a little over $1,000, so two-thirds.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, because I think it's worth a, financially, for it's worth us to try to educate people and then to see, again, we don't have a ton of watering holes like in the
right,
like near the city limits, and so right. I just want to keep this one open.
And historically, Vancouver Lake, when we said the water is closed because of the blue algae, people kind of treat that like the park is closed, you can't even come to the park, so yeah. People just didn't come.
It's
pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, so. Yeah, I mean, because yeah, it's hard to bring kids to a lake and say, don't touch the water, so I get it, like, you know, you don't go. All right, well, so can we look into this a little bit in terms of if we could maybe switch the code a bit, and then if it sounds like we can do that, maybe some more emphasis on the rules at the park.
Well, and we can still say, please don't bring all your body treating children into
the park. Well, I like the idea of kind of putting that out in a rule sheet. If
the raw,
do you think, Kelsey, can you put that onto your
Oh, yeah, I can put it on Facebook, too. Yeah.
To your point about the water, we don't have anything in the code, but the spray pad has rules posted there. And one of the, so the rules require, it says approved swim diapers or adequate protective covering required for any child requiring diapers. So that's one of the things it says. Anyone with a communicable disease or open wound is prohibited from using the spray park. Those are the rules that are posted specifically just for the spray park, but not for the water. I don't remember off the top of my head what the water advisory rules say, because we have water advisory signs as well posted.
See, if it's not listed there, then I mean, as a parent, I could see like, oh, it's okay here. Why, you know?
Yeah,
it's
they can wear a swim diaper here. They can wear one here. But like, that's chlorinated water, and it's all getting. I mean, it's pumped with chemicals. That's why it's okay there.
Plus, getting fresh water coming into it constantly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look into that because again, that's a pretty. I mean,
we're gonna pay for signs.
Yeah. Going back to that real quick, you mentioned that the lifeguards had several saves this summer. I know about two or three of them I saw in the news flash. We had more since?
Oh, in the average summer, they probably have at least a dozen rescues.
Okay.
I can come back. Just in the summer. I can come back when the season's over and just give you more.
Well, I think that would be a good something to put on our Facebook page and items like that, because I think people think, you know, lifeguards, okay, yeah. You know, they're there, somebody gets
to show up money.
Somehow, you know, it's like
local heroes.
But you know, I mean, some of them are they are used and they are utilized, and I think it'd be good to kind
they
of
support that
a little bit, and they are important. So, because a lot of people go, well, okay, so they don't have a lifeguard, big deal. Why don't you let us swim anyway?
They're very helpful with finding last year as well.
They asked all kinds of interesting questions.
Yeah.
And that's one of them.
Where's my kid?
Where's my child? I have a lost child. Is one of the most more popular ones, that's the one that scares me.
Oh, that gives me anxiety. Sure.
Thus far, it's just been a child has been wandering through the park somewhere.
Yeah, you get, because the lifeguards are there, they call the adults, take their eyes off their kids. They're not just sitting there watching the kids either. They're off picnicking and expecting the lifeguards to make sure that they're accounted for.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, so the lifeguards are specifically looking at the water, you know, and making sure they're doing jobs. The kid could be out playing around the corner.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to developed and undeveloped parkland.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
That was good.
Dave.
All right. Hopefully you guys had a chance to scan through this little letter I put together.
give you a quick rundown. A few months ago, Melata, Jamie, and I think just us, met with Lori Lebowski in her county role to discuss park lands, developed, undeveloped, and comp plan designations, because I had noticed that there was some properties that were given the public facilities designation to, and it was not uniform across county lands. We talked to her a little bit about it. It sounded like it was something she was fairly interested in and agreed that what they're doing now is not necessarily working. They had made an attempt recently, she said, to do basically any developed park as a public facility. If you look at GIS and look at their designations, you can tell that it didn't go very well. There's some undeveloped parks that are public facilities. There's some developed parks that are, it's a mess. And then, so I dove into it a little more, and looking at the definitions of public facility, sure, I guess you could stretch it and say a park or parkland fits into it, but it sure would fit in parks and open space definition a lot better. So, you know, the public facilities is your typical sewer treatment plants, jails, I mean, public facilities, and then you have your parks, open space. To me, it's a no-brainer. Let's see. Basically, our group came up with a small list, including talking with Lori, of reasons why we feel that this is important, that we are designating them correctly. We also feel that we should be designating them with purchase. It should be part of the purchasing process. You know, you go through all your other things, add comp designation on the docket for the next year. Once again, I'm not doing it, so it sounds easy. But and I realize the hard part is probably going to be doing the, you know, existing properties, which I get, and it takes time. So we are requesting support from the board to recommend that council has staff look into this for next year's docket. Melata, Jamie, you have anything to add?
I think that that would be one of the ways to protect our parks in the future, and but it also gives people for full disclosure and transparency as to what's planned for that site. There's an expectation that if the funds are excluded from PIFs, RCOs, and donations, they should be used for parks only and not surplus later on for other development.
Good point.
Yeah, I think that, of course, this is, we'll have to go through a work session process with the board, planning commission as well, and then a hearing process. And then, but we'll probably do, I know the dockets are full for this year, but we'll have to probably attack it in the early spring and get it up to next year's docket. Okay. I think, did Lori indicate that?
She said that'd probably be more palatable.
So
which is, as long as it moves forward.
As long as it's on the dockets for some time,
First, I have to applaud you, because this is one of those very technical things that nobody probably thought of, and this is just awesome to do. Yeah. So thank you.
That's I've heard it whined about for a long time.
My question is, are you going far enough? Should you take this another step and say, and by the way, all school properties should be listed as public facilities rather than...
Good. We could at least have them research it.
So just a question, because when Mark Bolt was here, and we addressed this was last year, which was kind of the driver on this, I thought he said that we had to put together a recommendation that at the time of purchase that it could not be changed by staff as a staff driver, but it had to come in as a request change, and that we could be the people making the request. So do we need to make a formal request?
Per Lori, she recommended that the board make a motion to have staff bring it to, is it the manager that it goes to now?
Yeah.
In other words, change process, which would make more sense to me.
Yeah. So basically, we're going through the right means rather than bypassing.
And then also, did you want to address, Dave, that there may be less cost involved because it will not require the same high level of review and engineering as a facility like a jail or a school?
Potentially. I mean, it would depend. I mean, the other big thing it does on the development side is we have a lot of parkland that's still zoned for 5,000 square foot residential lots.
Yep.
That shows up on our available lands inventory, which means when they're doing their urban growth boundary, it's taking all these parklands that aren't going to get developed, in theory, and basically counting against our urban growth boundary. So, you know, from a developer standpoint, I'd like those designated correctly so that way there's a real number to how much developable land there is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, a lot of the schools included in that, where the lots are being counted as well.
Not all, but there's. It's just like the whole public facility thing. It's real. It just needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and move that we forward this on to the.
To the county manager.
Yep. I second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
One last thought is this might be a really good document to pass around to other PAVs and just say, hey, heads up, we found this to be an issue in our jurisdiction. You guys might want to look at it as well.
Good point. Yes.
So you said this would benefit you as a developer
right.
from that standpoint. Would this be something that could be a document that would be helpful in our conversations with DEEP? Hey, this is one of the things we're doing in support of developers for this designation?
It might help. I know that they have had issues with the developable lands inventory as well. So,
yeah. Another step.
Yeah. Just one more.
Basically, the quick, like, what happens is it says there's X amount of land, therefore the value should be this, but there's really not X amount, there's Y. So the values are so much higher, and the state won't let you get more land unless you can prove that you need it, which you can't prove if you don't have the real numbers.
Data.
So,
junk in, junk out.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for going the extra mile there. All right. Manager's report.
Oh,
Bill.
Oh, it's me. Pass this up real quick. Some of the stuff we kind of talked about already, you know, like the day break part, but I'll start reading on this. So next Wednesday, Natalie and Laura and I are going up to Olympia to RCO to present on our two grants that we've got submitted. And then one is for the Frick Creek Community Park, and the other one is for the Lewis River Ranch acquisition. So after. Laura and I have been practicing our scripts and all that kind of stuff, and so hopefully we can go off without a hitch, and they'll consider us. The one thing I did notice this year, which is much different than years past, is the competition. It was like 76 grant applications from the parks. It's huge. You know, it's just wow. And so we've got a huge competition when it comes to our ask here. So we'll do our best, and hopefully we'll find out. We'll probably find out at the end of the year whether we're successful or not. So, Jeremy and Eric are representing us in the Parks Foundation Golf Tournament next Wednesday. So, lives may be lost, but
good luck.
And then Jeremy's birthday was yesterday, and I know she's
using the elevator. All right.
Happy birthday.
So embarrassed, he wants to jump out the window. Right?
Yeah, 29 again, huh?
Apparently,
this is pick on
Jeremy. Yeah. You want to pull that one up, Jeremy? So it's progressing very well. We still got some spots of turf that are coming in, but the ribbon cutting ceremony is scheduled for August 25th. So there it is, August 25th, and so please stop by and join if you can. It's on a Saturday. And I believe it's at 9 in the morning.
It says 10 on the flyer.
Bill, do you remember how much we paid for the land for this park?
Ooh,
I can look that up.
I'm just curious what the total overall cost was.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad because we bought many years ago. There's no development around it.
Oh,
it's just
okay.
The old homes that were on the street leading them. That was the only thing around. Everybody's going, why in the world are you buying way out here? Now look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge development. Sean Hennessy, he's our new county manager. He's on board. And in fact, Jeremy and I just met him this morning out at Curtin Springs Wildlife Habitat to take a look at the house. That was our original intent, to take the house down and put a park hose pad there. And so Councilor Bolt wanted us to hang on to the house, which it needs work. It's a big house. And what do we do with a house on a piece of property like that? So he's going to, he took a look at it with us, and he's going to just kind of go back and talk to Councilor Bolt. So we'll see what happens with the house. I mean, if we hang on to it, we'll probably rent it. That's my guess, so we can at least bring a revenue in it, but I don't want it to sit there vacant because it's just going to be an attractive nuisance, and it's going to cost us a lot of money. It really is. It's a 100-year-old home, and it needs work.
Get it on the historical registry.
What's that?
If you get it on the historical registry over 100 years, then there's federal dollars, isn't it?
Yeah, and grants and stuff, but not for maintenance, I don't think. It's just
not for regular
maintenance. So it's a bird. So we're kind of figuring out what we're going to do with that. So, and we can't use it for, like a youth commission.
Because of the trips.
Because of the trips. Yeah. One trip will trigger price improvements. Yeah, so it's deemed a single family dwelling, and the trips that are associated is all we've got to work with. So we're kind of, our hands are kind of tied on this one. Conservation techniques, we've talked about that. So Steve Dew is actively working on the PIF updates. That's including the trails into PIFs, as well as consolidating PIF districts from the 7 that we've got down to 3. And our problem is we're probably not going to meet our timelines. Steve is supposed to have had it done by the end of August. He's not sure if he's going to be able to hit that deadline because it is fairly complex, you know. So he's got to reevaluate. He's actually got to come to rework the PIF calculation, that formula.
Is it because of the consolidation of the districts or other discussions?
The trails piece of it.
Trails piece
is going to trigger some added components now. Will it change the PIF rates? Yes, but are we going to act on that? No, probably not. We're not going to increase PIF or ask to increase PIF rates because we just haven't been doing it.
Right.
So, but the formula does have to be changed to account for that, as well as our standards, for trails and that. So Lori Lebowski and Amanda Megabrink, they're both asking if we can potentially push it off to next year's docket, just so we get it all completed this year. If we have to keep it on this year's docket, we probably have to narrow the scope down to just trails, and then we'll have to pick up the consolidation next year as a separate docket item. Plus, we don't know where we're going with DEEP yet. Mm-hmm. So it's going to cost us more money to go out and get a new contract to start up again and finish up. It just makes sense that let's just keep rolling through it, and then just get it on the docket item next spring. So I've got a meeting with Councilor Olson, Councilor Blum next Wednesday to ask them a question. So we'll find out what they have. They're the ones that are actually driving this. So we'll ask them if we can take a little extra time, make sure we can get all the updates for the PIF done in one big cohesive swipe and be done with it. Does that sound reasonable?
Okay.
Well, Steve's moving to California, so is that going to change? Is that part of his problem?
No, he's still going to come up and for the critical meetings, like the work session and the hearing with the board, and so we have the planning commission as well. He'll come up
for this particular time.
So he'll just go to his commute for these.
We're going to have to start watching around for local people that are on top of things too. Mm-hmm. Things change.
Yeah, exactly. He said that there don't be any change in continuity with our relationship because of this move.
But it does, well, in a way.
It adds expense.
Yeah. I can't have him just, zip up here for a
few days.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Right.
So we'll see. Maybe we can make some hit those deadlines. Laurie Lubowski is really nervous about it, though. I just want you to know.
That thing's on her plate as well.
Yeah.
So, of course, Laurie and I are presenting on sort of that was the original understanding that we would be done with the update by the end of August. So we present the deed in September. So we'll present on what we've got to date.
When you get a time on their agenda, will you let us know? So if I can make it, I don't show up for the whole meeting,
yes,
just your spot.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
I think, are we kind of last on the list, you know, or actual agenda been?
The actual agenda is not, wasn't available yet. I anticipate it will be, but just the two agenda items were posted on their last agenda.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. As soon as it's available, we'll forward it.
Yeah, we'll do that, Kelsey.
Okay, great.
Anderson Property Acquisition, let's talk about that already. Working with the City of Vancouver to improve the Burnbridge Creek Trail Crossing. You want to bring that one up, Jeremy? So we've been meeting with the City of Vancouver Transportation staff. Burnbridge Creek Trail, the county has one piece of that trail, and it's basically on Isabel Avenue, which is also our 51 district, what's left of it. So here's Burnbridge Creek running west to east. Here's the whole I-5 corridor. Here's Isabel Avenue. The one thing that really was never addressed properly is where Burnbridge Creek comes out to Isabel Avenue, and people have to walk down Isabel Avenue and pick back up the trail. A lot of them kind of get lost. I don't know where the trail picks up at. There's no wayfinding signs here. Mm-hmm. So they just kind of turn around and go back. Same thing with these people that are coming across, because once you get over here, you need to go across the bridge, a bridge crossing to go across. But once you get up here, it's like, which way do you go, left or right? Brian Potter says he's got wayfinding signs in his office. He just hasn't put them up because it's so congested here. So we're working with City of Vancouver Transportation, because the trail is largely being managed by them. It basically is. We don't really have...
Other than that little section, yeah.
Yeah, actually, they take care of this also. So although it is on county property, City is really willing to work 50-50 with us to get a plan put in place for crossing, a signal crossing probably, but they don't like right here, this corner right here, people come flying down here. In fact, I had a meeting 2 weeks ago down at City Hall. When I left there, I decided to go drive this to refresh my memory. One of the motorcycle accident here where somebody just died, so I came by and there's somebody living with a blanket over him, which is kind of bad, this sad. So they would like to potentially, this is a piece of property that we own, called Alki, maybe route the trail down through this park property out, and so we put a crossing here, be a lot safer. So that's what we're talking about. So to do that, we need to initiate an interlocal agreement with the City of Vancouver. I talked to Keith about that this morning. We need to basically start up an interlocal agreement that's broad-based, and then under that, we'll do a series of memorandum of agreements or memorandums of understanding for each specific project. Like this will be one project, 68th Street will be another project, Section 30 will be another project. So all these different projects that we're engaged with the City of Vancouver on, those are MOUs. So the difference is with an interlocal agreement that's board approved and MOUs are either he or our new county manager approves those. So, basically, it's basically a safety project that we're going to be engaging
up on the hill
together. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that hasn't been done after all these years.
The reason we thought that land was between the freeway and Hazelville, we thought we were going to be able to get a hold of that property.
Okay.
And it's a nice little piece of property we couldn't get a hold of.
Is it privately owned?
So it was Fish and Wildlife at one point. And I don't know what it is now.
I'm not sure either. Good question.
We were checking in on just to see.
See who's up, who owns it right now?
Yeah, who owns it, and are they willing to give it up or give it easements, and then you don't have near the
exactly.
Well, you still have that coming down the hill around the corner there like that. So.
Yeah, because right now that's quite a 600 feet from the top to the bottom there, so that's quite a jog. And it's just people get lost. They just don't know. That's it. All the other crossings for Burnbridge Creek are well marked. You know, you've got the
the signaled intersections like Andreessen, yeah. There's like three or four crossings. St. John's is another mm-hmm. one. So, okay. So that's happening. So I'll be working with Julie Hannon on working up an ILA on that. So working with the city, let's see, Debbie Canson, I'm not sure if you heard the bad news, but she...
I didn't. That was no, surprising.
She did. She's not even around. So I Councilor Bolt asked, she says, what happened to Debbie? I didn't know. That's when I first found out. So I responded back. I called the city of Battleground, and their HR person answered the phone for the community center and said she's no longer here. And that's about all they could tell me. But I got home, and this is in the reflector that she resigned.
So. Huh. Anyways, was it health issues?
Unfortunately, I have no way of getting a hold of her because she's
the chief scientist. She had that problem last year. So.
Yeah, she.
She's.
Remember when I brought up to you some time ago that the Battleground City Council had a kind of a vote of no confidence in Battleground Parks?
Yeah.
And that if they couldn't afford to manage on their own, that the park system might go away. So I think some of that still stems into this. I don't know the details, but it's unfortunate that she's gone. She's a really sharp cookie, and she was also going to be a part of our Camp Bonneville committee.
She lived up in Spokane, or where did
she was? She was
Seattle area.
South of Seattle.
South Tacoma.
She worked for Metro.
Yeah, she was commuting. She was commuting back and forth.
She had a house up there. She had an apartment here. Interruption. So I think she left that whole area. So yeah. And I've never had her personal phone number, so I can't even get in touch with her.
I'm sure Diana.
I might
can track her down. Kretschmar. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure I would be 100% sure Diana can contact her.
It'd be good to find out.
I'm just sad that she's gone because she was a great advocate.
Oh yeah.
They've been a huge help with our parking passes. We sold like 700 or 800 of them for us every year. It's wonderful. And I think that's gonna continue on. So we already talked about my meeting with Mitch Nichols and Bob Berquist. That's coming up on Monday. So hopefully we'll come up with a great message for Dogba, and we'll send that by. Send that your way. Heritage Farm Master Plan work session is scheduled with the board for August 29th. So that was a Heritage Farm. That was a plan that's about 11 years old, and we're going to dust it off and make the changes because there have been some pretty significant changes on the Heritage Farm, and we need to note that and get people's input.
So are they putting a bunch of sewer entries to that line?
Yeah, down here in Summit East. Sewer. It's pretty substantial.
Yeah, it must be because it's every couple
I think they're upgrading the sewer outlets.
Is there some vision we have for the land that we'll need?
Just kind of amazed that all of a sudden.
I don't
know. For the farm.
Yeah.
Sounds like the probably more for the whole region. Independence of the farm.
It's going down the center of 70th Street, so it's completely independent of the farm.
Yeah. Oh, well, I know that there was those issues up above where there was the desire of the community center, but between the traffic and then there was some water issue up there, I think.
Well, the last
real like road stopper.
Fixing the water.
Yeah.
No.
So.
No hidden secrets from us, Bill?
No.
I was just curious.
No, we did one big change. We did a boundary line adjustment. So we swapped 5-acre parcels. Remember on our field trip, we talked about that. That's one change. The Children's Learning Center would be switched from 68th Street over to 78th. Much better access.
Much better access.
And there's actually a piece of property that would work really well. It's not steep. So those are a couple big changes, and then reiterating the trail that wraps around the entire site. So we've got a farm advisory board. That's why I don't talk about the farm that much here, because we let them make the decisions on that stuff. So which Councilor Bolt is a part of that. So, what else we got? Oh, geriatric center. So this is interesting.
It's real interesting.
I've got several choice comments to make.
John, you didn't know about this?
I knew about the transfer. I didn't know they were looking for the money.
Well, so Jerry, I met with Jerry last week.
Did you read the last line of that?
So we have the Round Lake Dam right here. It's on Round Lake, but it also controls the Lachmas Lake as well. So you want to go to the next picture? So, as you might know, Georgia Pacific's getting out of the business of being in business slowly. I think they have
at that mill.
They got a small bag factory or converting plant that's still running.
Still making paper towels there.
Yeah, they're down to about 160, down to 1500.
If that.
So it's pretty substantial decrease. So here's the fish spillway here, the fish trap, and then you have a wraparound. This is an overflow, and then here's the actual dam right now that runs down into a series of canals that run all the way down to the canvas mill, and so. Talking to Pete Capel about 2 years ago, he says, yeah, they're trying to give us the dam at some point in time. And he asked me if we wanted it. No. And so, but it's my understanding there's no federal regulations involved. However, absolutely huge liability insurance, so $80,000 a year for the city of Canvas, and that's using the consortium. So I reached out to the county. I haven't got an answer back as to how our insurance is structured. So maybe we can afford it without having to pay, or we can at least share the cost, you know, share ownership, share the cost of this structure. But so they're actually giving us an ultimatum, if you will. Not us, but the city of Canvas. We don't necessarily have, we're not really involved with this. The city of Canvas is kind of on the hook. But they said that if we don't take it, being the city of Canvas or Clark County, they're going to put the floodgates open and they're going to drain the lake. So I'm like, what? So,
I've got a different perspective.
I'm thinking drain the lake and the Lacma Shores HOA will pay
that. I was about to say,
2 seconds flat.
Lacma's Lake, and if they wait a little while, north of Lacma's Lake is going to be developed. So, all of north of Lacma's Lake is going to be
developed. I like his idea. Go ahead and drain the lake, and then the county announces an expansion of Lacma's Park.
Yeah. And then we sell one side for waterfront property.
Yeah.
Right.
This is one more photo.
Terrible.
So, Photoshop what it looked like without water.
I'd be interested to see what's underneath a lot of that water.
So every year about October, they actually do run the lake down. So you see a lot of the shorelines, and then you start seeing all these old barrels that are laying on the bottom.
Oh, I know.
Those are old float barrels. And then every year we get accused of putting toxic waste in the lake. It's like, no. So, if you're walking.
It's not a dump site.
Here's the fish trap right here. And then you walk across. And then here's the actual dam right here. Well, the one thing we talked about doing, because this is definitely not ADA accessible, and we don't own this, but we own the land on both sides, is to have a floating walkway that goes from side to side, so they can go on wheelchairs. Everybody can go through here.
That would be
so that's kind of independent of this.
There's a whole lot of money.
So the caveat to this is that we're supposed to have an answer back by August 20th.
Oh.
Jeez.
So
they've had it for 100 years, and suddenly in 2 weeks, you got to give it.
Well, the mill's been going out of business for seven or 8 years.
They have it now.
So Jerry came to me with half a hand asking if we could help. And so I'm trying to put that question back out to the county and get an answer back. So. Another thing that's happening that Lacma missed is, and I don't have a picture for it, that is on the Round Lake Trail itself, there's one private property that comes down, and actually just the very corner of it divides our trail in half. And so if the property owner were to really want to be bad, they could actually fence off our trail, where we would have no access that thousands of people use all the time. So we are working with that owner through a real estate firm to see if we can get a small easement so that we can protect that trail.
How did we build that trail through their property in the first place?
I don't know. I mean, if you look...
That was an IAC grant.
If you look at GIS, it shows that it's our trail. It comes just right around the corner of the property.
How about what is the law when you...
Adverse possession.
Adverse possession.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things are a little strange.
So. I don't see that.
It sounds like the owner's willing to work with us, so we'll have to go through a small process and get an easement established, which I think is probably going to be the better way to go.
Which would be
unless they want $1 million for it.
No, it's going to be the appraised value, which is on about 35 square feet.
Way cheaper than adverse possession.
Oh, boy, yeah. So, go and bring it up, Jeremy. Thank you. Could you put on the trails? Turn the trails on? There, parks and lands and trails. There you go. Okay. So here's the red dotted line. It shows it coming right around. Oh, in reality,
no, he doesn't.
It comes right through here. And so from here, it's almost a straight drop off to the lake. There's no land to put it. We'd have to put an elevated boardwalk in around. It's like this down to the lake. So we're kind of stuck there. So I'll let you know how that goes. So I just sent the response back yesterday. And so hopefully we'll start working with us. We'll try to expedite that and get it done.
Who is the owner?
I'm going to go back, Jeremy, to the
Paul Burns, Mr. Burns.
So the gentleman who's selling the property also owns this house right here. So he's got to sell that separately from this one.
Oh, okay.
But it is listed on the market right now. I would love to be able to buy it. Because whomever does buy that house, if they build a house on it, you're going to see it from the trail. It's going to kind of ruin that view shed from here. But we don't have the money. It's a general fund site. I don't know. And had this been happened about, let's say like 12 months ago, we could probably have had it on the conservation features list.
Yeah, we would have. Yeah, been able to. Yeah.
Wow. So don't we have a... Did we put in for other properties that came up as
we
issues?
Didn't get.
Did we put a section of money in for that? It seemed like we did.
So we had two properties that didn't work out with conservation features. So after we moved those before the bond went out.
Before.
Yeah.
But we had some.
Also, that means there's revenue, excess revenue.
So we have a fund balance in conservation features that is already spoken for. So it's for matching grant, for matching grants and that kind of stuff for the stuff that's
going on.
Yeah. So you don't have much of a contingency fund or a special fund just to pick up emergencies like this.
You're sure we don't have contingency funds in that particular
in conservation futures? We got the fund balance.
Hey, Jeremy. Because I remember we had an item.
Look up Zillow and see how much they're selling it.
Possibly.
Might ask. Just does he know about this?
They want 280,000.
Oh, 280,000.
Yeah.
For what? Quarter acre.
Quarter acre.
That's what we have. What is it?
27. I'm sorry.
Brand 1 PM. 27.
If we go up to the property or the property fact sheet, it'll show you what size.
What do you want to know?
On that piece right there, what size is the property?
Which one? The house?
The one that you highlighted? Yeah, property fact sheet.
113,000.
Acre.
1 acre.
Nice lot.
It's a nice lot.
I don't know.
So, a little tidbit. So our vegetation management team has a display out at Clark County Fairgrounds, and they do that every year.
The county
and
fair.
They're out there just teaching people about noxious and invasive weeds. And so it's been pretty hot out there. I seen Kevin Tyler out there last Saturday evening, and he looked like he was running out. So it's pretty cute though. So we talked about our lakes and ponds. We're kind of struggling to keep them open because of blue-green algae and E. coli. It's just nature of the beast. So we'll try to do some more signage down there at Salmon Creek to try to keep kids out. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be anything stopping bigger kids from.
I like to think 7-year-olds aren't out there consciously pooping in the lake, but I don't know.
Probably watch Caddyshack.
Yeah, I resisted not bringing that up to the whole discussion. I'm glad somebody did.
So we talked about lower daybreak already. So we're in the design and permitting phase, and we just initiated that. So that's got $600,000 to spend on that. So we'll work with the equestrian community and let them have a good hand in it, because it sounds like they got some volunteers that would love to be a part of it. So that's all I've got. That's all I wrote. And I did talk to Sean Hennessy this morning. Really versatile guy. Nice guy. And he seems to be really down to earth and just laid back. So I really appreciate his style. And I think he's going to be a good asset for us. And I asked him if he wouldn't mind coming to one of our future meetings, and he said he would, as soon as the dust settles a little bit. So I want to make chance to meet all of you personally. Good. In addition to that, one other thing, we're getting a brand new deputy public works director under Heath. That'll be my new boss. Heath is just overloaded with people. Ever since Department of Environmental Services dissipated, went away, and all those people came over to the public works, and just really loaded them up. He's got 13 direct reports. There's different divisions, and so the whole idea is to split that off so you can actually go out and do some of the things that he directly needs to do. So the gentleman's name I don't have down just yet, but I will get that to you as soon as that offer is completed. So I think by next month at this time, we'll probably have somebody on board. So, and I'll be dragging them to this meeting as well to introduce. Okay.
I would recommend that the co-chairs set an appointment with him and go in and see the manager sooner than later.
Yeah.
Even before the dust settles.
To woo him, Kelly. To woo him.
whatever you want to call it.
Oh, it's good to have a relationship before you have an ask.
That's how we really were able to pull some things together.
Absolutely.
When we were co-chairs. It's a good idea to do.
It's always good to reach out. Yeah.
Because it could be a while before you have time to get to this group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys could set it up.
Something new. Okay. We can, good idea. Okay, so it brings us to our round table version of Fun and Frolic. Laura, do you have anything?
I just have this. So one of the things that Karen Llewellyn and Dora have been working on is making sure that people know who our volunteers are in the park, for not only for the public, but for our staff as well, so they know why they're there. And so our communications office actually designed these and put these together, but this says our greatest resource, Park County volunteers, so they have a lanyard and a new badge. They'll be putting numbers on them as well, but they just wanted to show you the design. It's kind of cool.
It's a good idea.
But I think Conservation Futures is probably our greatest resource.
All right.
You guys want a lanyard? You want a lanyard?
What?
If I'm pulling these.
Oh, you got extra ones?
You're volunteers.
Yeah?
Yeah. Can they put our logo on it?
Sure. Yeah.
Laura's like, no, what size do you want?
I put this on.
We'll leave that up to you, Laura. You can get us lanyards and cards when they're available. John, what about you?
Let's see. With the cities of Camps Washougal, I've put together a community center discussion group. I'm not quite sure what it's called, but I'll be sitting on that and trying to move that forward. Scanning, and I think that's about it out there.
Are they looking to replace the swimming pool?
The swimming pool, the decision to close the swimming pool is long since made.
I know that it's gone bye-bye.
Yeah, so this will be a replacement for the swimming pool plus a rec center plus potentially community center components. The discussions are, what is it exactly going to be, how is it going to be funded, where is it going to be placed?
Wandering YMCA locations, going to land, one of them going to land there? Or?
Potentially.
Okay. Kelly?
Well, I was a little surprised at the elections this week that Mark is not going to be in the final round, so I mentioned earlier that I think we ought to do something uniquely special for him. I think he's proven to be a good advocate for parks and has done things that I would have never dreamed somebody in his position would have done. So, and then of course we got this property you're just talking about today, which is right across the street from his home. So maybe that's the one, but I'd like to think that we could come up with something that we can do for him.
Didn't our naming policy say something about not naming after a...
Well, there may be some rules in that. And,
we can make exceptions. I support it. I think this is great.
We did it
because
he
was a major advocate for many years. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm not saying that's it, but
it would be appropriate.
We need to come up with something.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing, next Thursday, August the 16th, I'm inviting you all to come over to my place for dinner at 6 o'clock in the evening. Please let me know you're coming so I can be prepared. But
I want to come so bad. I want to come so bad. I'm out of town that night. Oh, but it is my 10-year wedding anniversary, so I would have, like, we would have saved on dinner. Dang it, Kelly.
With the anniversary,
we save money.
Yeah, that's my husband's thought. How do we say it?
How do we save money?
Well, how do we save money on this?
If you're really nice, and
another invite.
We're doing it every Thursday night.
So,
we'd like to get as many of you as possible for that night. That's kind of reserved for this group. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm in the same boat as Kelly, so just bring that back.
Is it your anniversary too?
No, but we previously scheduled to go get away together.
My cell phone number is 921-8374. Hopefully I'll hear from you if you can make it. If you can't, let me know too. Otherwise I'll be fixing a plate for you and you won't be there.
And there'll be tomatoes on board,
there
right?
There will be tomatoes.
There will be tomatoes.
There you go.
Yeah. I have nothing to add today.
I'm good. Kelly?
Kelsey, sorry.
Done it today twice, huh? What's your name again?
I got called Chelsea my whole childhood because my best friend was named Chelsea, so I have nothing. Kelly has nothing.
All right, so I was out at La Center meeting with planners, engineers on a project, and I was talking to Naomi Hansen. I don't know if you know her, associate planner there.
Yeah.
I think she was like admin for a long time. She does it all.
Okay.
That kind of person.
We met her out at the Conservation Futures.
She's the one that after she came to the trails.
Was she the one testifying?
So I would believe because we were talking about trails. And she's writing grants left and right. And, like, I mean, they've got some great vision. And I wasn't at the last all-PAB meeting. But she knows what she's doing. I mean, she's got this, like, grand scheme of all these connections between, like, the high school, the elementary school, the new middle school. I mean, it was impressive. And she's very, very into it. So,
Naomi who?
Naomi Hansen.
Barb, you met her. She.
I'm sure.
We went up to that property, and she and the assistant were going to lead us down that trail, down to the...
The one I couldn't walk, yeah.
She is definitely advocate for trails.
I was there. I couldn't pull it out.
Evidently knows how to get some grants.
Yeah,
so
she's pretty good.
She's quite sharp.
Yeah, she's one of the sponsors for the Conservation Futures funding.
Okay.
One property that we acquired.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I might bring that up with Curtis because they were on board for the next all camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was passionate. Yeah. She just started talking about it and just went. I mean, it was impressive. And I had no idea they were doing any of it, so. But, yeah.
That's really cool.
That's all I've got.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're actually using Pittsburgh trails. Or they actually have they have trails in their growth plan, you know, as far as establishing the service levels. That's the one group that I know has that. It's kind of cool.
Hmm. Yeah, and they offer credit.
Yeah, they do.
So, yeah. I think nobody's developing here. No, Jeremy, you have anything?
No, I've actually got one thing I forgot to mention. It's something relatively new, specifically for John. Riverview Financial approached me about wanting to do a special project at William Clark. So I mentioned the possibility of a play area out there because there isn't one.
Uh-huh.
So we're far away from getting it because we have to do planning and all that stuff. We're kind of looking for something a little more closer in the future.
Right.
And I mentioned
RV pad.
Yeah. So your nature play area along your pathway.
Oh.
You said that wasn't funded.
right?
That's why it's not going.
Well, it's not that it wasn't funded. The bids came back way too high.
But so same. They are willing to throw some money at a project.
Wow.
And so I've got to contact.
I'm all over that.
So that's going to be on the same trail that connects to William Clark. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And I brought that up to them, and they were totally engaged with that.
That would be really good visibility for them.
So. Absolutely. So.
And design is a great design.
I'll
send that information to you.
Who in the review did you talk to?
I don't remember the name. It's a gal that represents a consortium of different branches, if you will.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's Riverview Financial. There's several branches that come together looking for a big specific project. I think this is going to be it. So
awesome.
Yeah. If we can make that happen, that'd be great for the kids, great for the trail system. The only thing about William Park for the trail system or a playground in there is it's going to definitely go underwater at least once a year.
Right.
Might as well have it up at a higher location, nature play, kids love it. Makes sense.
There's so many things floating down the river these days that we used to say it's all right if it went underwater, but nowadays. Things are gone. Snags in there. Snags are pulling out or whatever.
Well, we're getting pretty concerned about William Clark because we're losing our beach and it's starting to erode pretty heavily.
Yeah.
And it's actually undermining a couple of our table pads and it's heading right towards our restroom. So it's going to be substantial. So we're going to do some kind of a big shore restoration project in order to preserve those assets. Otherwise, not to mention the artwork of the three Lewis and Clark canoes.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually walk underneath those pads.
Really?
Because the canoes are shut down because it's undermined so much. So Jeremy's been trying to work on
it. The canoes is kind of horrible because as soon as we patched it, we were in the middle of patching them up to shore them up, and the dam started to let out insane amount of water in the spring.
Right.
So we kind of undid some of them. Off person's skinned. But we did fix the table pad and the canoes.
Yeah, but that entire shoreline is eroded away, so we got to do something.
It's amazing how much movement there is along the river, even though we think there isn't.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
So, okay. Well, anything else? We're adjourned. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Awesome.